720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth with you till 2 a.m. Thanks for being with us this rainy, chilly evening. I hope that you are snuggled up somewhere warm and cozy this evening, snuggling with the radio, spooning with the radio, if you will. And I appreciate you listening very much. Taking your calls and text messages, 312-981-7200. All that good stuff. You may have heard me a little bit earlier. I stopped by Hannah Stanley's show this evening. She does the Girls Night Out show 7 to 9 p.m. And as you may have heard, at the end of her show, I will be moving to that time slot. So I want to take a second and thank you all for staying up late with me all of this time, the last couple years, almost 3 years. I appreciate it, and I appreciate all your calls and text messages and social media and all that. So we're going to start the new year off on January the 9th. I'm going to be moving to that spot. Hope you'll come with me. Hope we'll still meet in podcast land and all that good stuff. Of course, it's I'm sorry to see a friend leave the station. We all wish Hannah Stanley well. We love her, and we miss her already. But new things. Onward and upward, as we like to say in this business. So that's my thing. That's what's going on. Merry belated Christmas to everybody. I hope you did something super fun and wonderful or meaningful or lovely. I heard lots of things on social media of people talking about how they celebrated. And I really loved seeing on Instagram and on Facebook how people were sharing pictures of fun family traditions. And I thought that was kind of interesting, the things people do. Even people who don't celebrate Christmas, the things that people do on Christmas Day, always fun. Keeping true to my people, I ordered Chinese food because that's what happens on Christmas Day. Yeah, it's all about Chinese in a movie. So, but it was very fun. I feel like Shane, and tell me if this is a thing I just don't know about. I feel like I had a lot of people that I'm connected to on social media that made weird hats out of paper for Christmas. Is that a thing?
No, it's not. You're friends with some psychos.
Oh.
Okay. I remember the pilgrim hats.
No.
No,
this
they weren't
was like
pilgrim hats?
Tissue paper crowns. I saw several people, none of which know each other.
I didn't see a single one of those.
Huh.
I celebrated my Christmas by calling the Craigslist ad Elf on a Shelf Man, and he sat on my elf.
I'm sorry, what?
you didn't see that circulating?
No.
There's this guy in the Chicagoland area who has volunteered to be a real live elf on a shelf and sit somewhere in your house during a party for an hour. He charges $150
bucks an
hour.
We've had him on the show before.
Really, have you?
Yeah.
On this one?
Yes. Real elf?
No.
No, different
guy.
Okay.
No, he's just this random dude who dresses in an elf.
Because this is also
onesie.
A guy that dresses
right.
as the elf on a shelf.
Maybe it is this. Not what I was producing.
He came on with Johnny Immerman talking about Immerman's Angels.
Okay, that wasn't me. That was probably Katie Gibson.
Okay, probably was. Shout out to her.
Regardless,
yeah,
I hired him for $150 bucks an hour, and he sat in my family Christmas party and stared at everybody.
What?
That's what his job is.
Are you lying to me right
yes,
now?
Yes, I'm lying.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
I should hope. But you know what? You know what? You never know. People do weird stuff.
They do.
And that would be weird.
Yeah, but you know what?
Just,
people do weird things.
Just really way weird.
What did you do this week, Jennings?
Worked.
Yeah.
Word. Yeah.
Yeah, me too. Word.
Yeah.
You know what? Darlis and I, Andre Darlis, she and I, we were filling in for Bill and Wendy on Christmas Eve, and we had so much fun on the air together, but she had this group that came in, and it was an all-female violin band, and they played these very beautiful, beautiful arrangements of Christmas music. But they also, their shtick is, you can hire them for an event, and during the cocktail hour, they'll play beautiful classical music, but they also want to kind of challenge people's perceptions of what it means to be a classical musician and be a violin player. And so they also know all these rock covers.
Cool.
Which was very cool. So we convinced them to take a break from Christmas for 1 second and start playing Carry On My Wayward Son. And it was just all this violin, and they were so awesome.
Have you ever seen Rachel Barton Pine in her non-classical iteration?
I have not.
She works with a heavy metal band.
That's cool.
And she plays electric violin. And it is, it's very cool. It's very cool when she gets to cranking.
When she gets into cranking.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Oh, yeah. I forgot the name of the band, but I've never seen her play classically, but I've seen her do that, and it's like, wow.
I see. I wish I could do that. I wish I had. I really cannot play an instrument. When I was a kid, I was in the orchestra, but you know, have any discernible musical talent. And I wish I did. My dad does. He plays instruments and primarily guitar. And I just, I wish I had that skill where I could just, and my dad can like listen to music and then play it on the guitar. I wish I had that skill. I do not have any musical instrument talent whatsoever.
I don't see that.
You've never tried to just pick some, you never sat down at a piano and just kind of twiddled around a little?
Sure, nothing happens of any quality that anyone would like to hear.
You didn't do the like the required recorder playing in elementary school?
No, I did not play recorder.
You didn't?
No, I did orchestra.
Yeah, okay. I did classical piano when I was a kid.
See, I wish...
I played drums for like 15 years. Everybody needs that musical...
Yeah.
It's a great outlet for stress. It's a great way to express your... inner self. It's a great way. It's a great place to just be you.
Right. So I just swear instead.
That'll work most of the time.
Yeah.
You know, in most places.
Great, great,
that works out.
That's great.
It doesn't work so well for radio hosts, but I can't express myself fully on the air.
No.
My civil rights are being violated.
It's a good thing children don't listen to this show.
I know.
God.
They don't.
Bad example.
Oh, yeah. Big time. Big time.
But you could admit it.
Fully. I totally acknowledge that. That disclaimer should be at the top of the show. All right. So you know what? We've got a lot to get into tonight. It is the last show of this show for the year. So we're going to talk about some end of year stuff. Coming up, we're talking with John and Julie Hammerly. They're the folks from Hammer Vision on the Chicago Now platform. They're awesome. They've been at that for a very long time, and they know what's what. So we're going to be talking about the best and the worst movies and TV of the year. So that's going to be a great review. See if I can get some predictions out of them for some things we're going to see in 2016, because we all want to know. And then we're going to be talking with Gina Murata. She's the happiness coach, and she's going to help us figure out how to make 2016 super kick-ass and magical and wonderful, because that's what she does for people. So we're going to be talking all about that. And then at 1 o'clock, we're joined by social media editor of the Chicago Tribune, Scott Kleinberg. And we're going to be talking about the top technology stories and top social media events and things that happened this past year. And we're going to get some predictions for him for the year ahead of what we can expect from social media and in apps and all of those good things. So we've got a big show planned for you. We're going to take a little break and we come back. We're talking all about movies and TV. So stick around on 720 WGN.
Let's get it started.
Hello.
In here.
Esteemed producer Shane Reardon, how many songs are possibly mashed up in what you're playing right now?
It's just the one.
It's just the one.
Like throwing hello in there.
You just torment me with Adele. Hi, friends. It's Amy Guth on 720 WGN. We have a big show for you tonight. We're mostly talking about all the things that happened in 2015 and all the things you can expect in 2016. So to get that conversation going, I've invited my very good friends, John and Julie Hammerly, to join us on the show tonight because they are experts in all things film and television and plenty more other things. They know all about it. You can find all the stuff that they do at Hammer Vision on Chicago Now and read all about it, read all their wonderful things that they're doing. But I would love to start, John and Julie, welcome. I would love to start by talking about the things, the TV moments that you thought just super rocked this past year. I have a short list, but I want to hear what you guys have to say first.
Okay. I think, and we both agree on this, I believe, is, and maybe it's because it's one of the newest things we've seen recently, but Fargo season 2.
Oh, that's not on my list. That's a good one.
Was awesome. I mean, the first season was fantastic. And we didn't know if the second season would live up to it, but it did. I mean, it was like from the first shot, we were just like, we haven't seen anything like this on TV. It was so, 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 so good. I think you agree with that.
Yeah, for sure. I think one of the things that rocked my world, Amy, was over the summer on USA called Mr. Robot. And to say the moment or the sequence that rocked my world would be a total spoiler. So I can't give it away.
Okay, so you can't do it.
I can't give it away. But I will say that it snuck up on you. And when the big spoiler reveal came, it was a jaw-dropping moment.
Okay.
And it was a very cool show. It's so unlike anything that's on television these days in terms of the direction and how they frame characters. And it's just very unsettling, and it's just a weird show, but it was cool. And to be on during the summer when you're like...
when nothing's on and everything's in rerun.
Right.
Yeah.
That was a cool moment.
All right.
Yeah, what'd you have?
I'm going to put... there were two moments in Veep that I thought were really good, when Amy completely lost her mind and just went off on everybody.
Yes.
And then when when Veep went nuts and she, like the election night or the night before the election, they were in the hotel room and she started to cry a little bit and just totally come unglued. I was like, oh, Emmy is happening right in front of my eyes.
Yeah.
Go. I loved Veep. I loved that show.
That show's fabulous.
So funny and so good. And I, it's one of those shows that when you finish the binge watch, you miss the people.
Yeah.
Because I mean, they're so part of your... Yeah.
They're so... they're caricatures, but at the same time, they do feel real. And Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and she's won, what, Emmys every year? That she's played this character, and it's always worth it. She's just so good.
And you notice the writing, too, on Veep, right? Like, I mean,
so
the writing
smart.
Is so good, even if they didn't have the actors that they have, which they do have, so that it's great. But, you know,
I totally agree.
Like, the rhythm and the dialogue, and it's all... You can hear it on the page, which is... Sets it apart from all the other shows.
That is such a great show. I really like that one. I liked, I also really liked Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
That was kind of a quiet one that a lot of people didn't watch or didn't get into. The reason I liked that is just having worked in the tech world, I feel like, I know that guy. I know that guy. I know that guy. I mean, it was so well represented and it was like conversations I've had with people. And particularly the Ehrlich Bachman character.
Oh,
I think
any
sort of tech operation has that guy in it.
Yeah.
That's going to sit there with like prayer hands to tell you something really not very remarkable.
Right.
And make a big deal about it. So I loved that show. I thought that was a good one.
The season finale of that one, too, it was like the tension. It was a masterclass in tension. The whole thing. It was great. That's a great show, too. HBO's comedies this year were really, really good.
Yeah, they've done good work this year.
When they added that investor character who...
that was just a complete nightmare.
Yeah,
that guy.
He was who wanted billions, not millions.
His third comma.
Yeah, his third comma.
And then he lost his third comma.
That was so funny.
Oh,
he was so hateable.
Yep.
Like, you hated that guy so much. I mean, and that's such a mark of good writing and good acting to me when a character is... You can't stop watching because you hate that guy so much.
Worst.
Right.
Another moment I think would be, and it's not really a moment per se, is the entire show was Better Call Saul, which was the spinoff of Breaking Bad, or the prequel, I guess.
Right.
But when you realize that these guys are pretty genius because they're basically doing Breaking Bad again. It's Saul Breaking Bad, you know, as an upstart idealistic lawyer who kind of muddles into criminal activity and the fact that they were repeating Breaking Bad right before your eyes when you thought you knew the show already.
Yeah.
It was kind of a cool moment for
That's
me to
true.
Realize
That's
that.
I forgot about that show. That's
a good
one too.
Well, there's so much good TV.
Yeah.
And it's so spread out throughout the year. I know I was talking to somebody about my favorite shows a couple weeks ago and I basically forgot about the entire first half of the year. I was like, oh yeah, Kimmy Schmidt and Better Call Saul and all these other shows. Another moment though that I thought of, and it's not really a moment, it's actually one whole episode. But Master of None, which was on Netflix, Aziz Ansari show.
Yes.
The episode, well, actually two of them.
I just wrote that down because I was just thinking of that show.
Is it the one about his dad? Like
that one was so good.
There was
a lot of good moments in that. And that show surprised me. I really did not have... It far exceeded my expectations because I went into it going like, another comedian with a show. It's going to be so-so. It blew me away. I thought it was so good and so funny. I really, really liked the episode where he has the date.
Oh,
and she does the Cartman.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That was so funny. That comes up in conversation all the time where you just have to throw in a respect my authority in a meta way because you're not doing Cartman. You're doing her doing Cartman.
Yeah.
Which was so good. I also think, we have to say SNL's been kind of interesting this year.
There have been moments. There definitely have been.
Yeah.
I think, actually, the Tina and Amy one, they did the Your Future Second Wife.
That was hilarious.
Oh, that was one of the best sketches.
Best sketches they've done in years. It
that was so
good.
Funny. And so well played, that third one.
Yes.
With like, he's thinking like, okay,
she's not too bad.
She's in college and she's pregnant with your second wife. That was so funny. That was so, so funny. There were some misses in that one though, I think, because the expectation is so high. If you're talking Amy Poehler and Tina Fey together hosting Saturday Night Live, you're thinking, I'm just going to die laughing the whole time. And so there was a couple of weird, I thought the two Hillaries was kind of funny and the reprisal of Sarah Palin again. Well, but also like there were some, come on, you missed it a few moments.
Doing the holiday episode too. Jimmy Fallon did it like 2 years ago and killed it. I think, and you expect like a bunch of cameos and like past stars coming back, and there weren't a ton of that. And but you know, I think what SNL does right this year is all the women are awesome.
Yeah.
And so anytime they do like a filmed, like a videotaped segment rather than like a live airing sketch, it always plays well. And if you let the women sing,
even better.
All those are great.
Week before last, question mark, I think, when Kate McKenna did the alien abduction.
Oh, yes.
That was like a whole new level.
Well, that's so funny. You just need them like goofing. Like that was half the fun was like Ryan Gosling trying to keep a straight face.
He couldn't do it. He was done.
But Kate McKinnon killed it.
Yeah.
But also Cecily Strong and Ryan Gosling trying to, anytime they crack up, it's
It's trying funny. To hold it together when she's off the rails. I mean,
off the rails. Yeah. And so funny. I mean, every word out of her mouth just furthered the joke and kept it going. And at no point, and I think this is what kind of fell off about SNL for a little while. I feel like the last few seasons, it kind of felt like everything was so overdone and it was like beating a dead horse. And once you, like, the joke would happen early and it would keep going and keep going and keep going. And it would be like, not funny. Yeah. But this year, I feel like it's been smarter and better. And I don't know what the change was, but I've liked it a lot better.
Yeah. And the Weekend Update, too, I think Colin Jost and Michael Che have really, they're getting their rhythm. Like in the beginning, it was a little rough, but now they're kind of getting it. And they're willing to throw some punches.
Yeah.
After the Donald Trump episode, anyway. I know that's,
sure.
That was a bit of a, actually, it was a little bit of a turning point. I think after that, now they're starting to get their teeth back. So,
sure. That's absolutely fair. I think we also have to mention the moment of Peggy Olson walking out like a boss in the final Mad Men. And there were so many, my social media feeds were filled on Halloween of lots of women wearing that outfit with a cigarette, an unlit cigarette and sunglasses and a box at a Halloween party. That was a easy costume for a lot of women, I think, because it was such an iconic moment. You know, if we think about when we first met Peggy Olson and she was so mousy and here's her end.
Right.
Right. It was kind of a glorious moment.
Wasn't that your profile picture, Julie?
For a little while. Yes. Yeah.
So
along with like a million other people.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Sure. I think, too, Doctor Who has been interesting this year with Peter Capaldi. I mean, I was really not into the idea at first. At first, I was like, he's going to be Doctor Who? What? What? That's not, that can't be. But it's been kind of interesting.
Oh, okay.
I think it's been interesting with him. I don't know that I ever really got him and Clara working. Like, that always seemed kind of weird this season. But, you know, I think he's been an interesting, he's grown on me as a Doctor Who this particular season.
I've heard good things. I mean, I've never, Doctor Who is such a imposing
it's a lifestyle,
to get into, right?
Yeah.
It is.
You have
it
to commit.
And it's totally like my style. I would totally love it. But
do you think Clara is going to come back considering how they left it?
I don't. I think she's out. I think she's
going
to be
done. I don't know. They didn't end her. She's still alive.
In another dimension, sure.
No, same dimension.
Well, yeah, I don't know. We'll have to ask them. No one has asked for my opinion on how to deal with Doctor Who. So until they pay me as a writer, we'll see. We'll see. All right. So we are talking with John and Julie Hammerly. They write Hammer Vision on Chicago Now. And so you should go to Hammer Vision, read all the stuff, follow them on social media, all that good stuff. We are talking about the best and the worst movies and TV moments of 2015, and we're going to talk a little bit about some things ahead in 2016. And Shane is telling me we're not taking a break yet. Is that true? All right, we're going to just go to news a little bit early. How about that, David Jennings? He's not on board with that. All right, we're going to keep talking another minute.
Okay.
So anyway, so when we come back, we are going to talk about maybe the worst moments in TV, because we got to talk about that, because there were some weird ones. There was also some maybe not so good movies this year we got to talk about, but then we also, of course, have to talk about the best of those. So lots to talk about, lots of things. Plus, you guys have all kind of stuff going on, all kind of stuff that we
got
to talk about. That you got stuff, you got stuff, like
I do
you got
have
big
stuff.
Yeah, Lord. All right, so
you have nothing.
I've got nothing. No, it's all you.
It's all good. So anyway, we're talking with John and Julie Hammerly. We're going to take a little break and get you to news when we come back. More all about TV, movies, all that good stuff. We'd love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. If you had a favorite or unfavorite movie or TV moment this year, let's talk all about it. 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth hanging out with you till 2 o'clock, and we turn things over to our friend David Plyer. I'm hanging out right now with John and Julie Hammerly. They write Hammer Vision on Chicago Now. You can check that out at chicagonow.com. And we are talking about the best and the worst of TV and movie stuff, moments, all that good stuff in 2015. And then in a second, we're going to get to their predictions for 2016 of what we think we can see, what we hope to see in 2016. I want to talk about kind of the worst moments of TV in this past year. But I also want to talk a little bit about spoilers, because people lose their minds over spoilers. To the point that I've seen people get into F-bombs and forget it, I'm unfriending you, and they get so hostile and angry. And I just feel like the spoiler is a relatively new invention.
Yes.
But I also think something might be wrong with me, because I really legitimately don't care if someone spoils the end of a movie for me. That does not bother me. I mean, someone will start describing a movie and they'll go, oh, I don't want to ruin it for you. I'm like, you're not going to. Just tell me. It's fine. I probably won't remember.
Yeah, there's there always is. That.
Yeah,
there there's
always like that. I won't remember what we were talking about by the time I get around to seeing it. But also, like, it just doesn't, I don't know, it doesn't bug me in the least.
It depends for me. I don't know why, but I actually quit a show because somebody spoiled the end of the season for me on Facebook. It was like the day after the finale aired.
Okay.
And he's like, I can't believe so-and-so killed so-and-so on Boardwalk Empire.
Okay.
And I was kind of only half into the show anyway, so then once I heard that, I was like, okay, I'm done anyway. But it depends, you know, because sometimes it sort of enhances watching the show when
right.
you know what's
you
going
have,
to happen.
Then you can kind of look at other details yeah. and think of, oh, this that thing that just happened is foreshadowing for what I know is coming.
Right.
Yes. And that's okay.
Yeah.
I think I had that a lot with, like, Dexter and Sons of Anarchy, yeah. where you know about key deaths in the show.
Yeah.
And the tension leading up to them is just like, when will that happen? And, oh, if they only done this instead of that, maybe that wouldn't have happened. So it does add another layer of enjoyment to the
sure.
show,
well,
even if you know what's going to happen. But
if your show hinges on this one thing and people not knowing about the secret, then your show has a problem.
Right.
Like, it should stand on its own even without, you know, having... Like, if I knew in foreshadowing that this character was going to die, it shouldn't, like, ruin the experience for me, I feel like.
Yeah.
You know?
And in fact, sometimes I find spoilers very validating, because I go, oh, I knew it.
Yeah.
I knew that was going to happen. I totally knew it. I was right. And then
yeah.
I can declare it.
Well, yeah. you can also weed out shows that way, too. Like True Detective season 2, I'd heard so many bad things about it. I was all game for spoilers. Like, bring it on.
Cause tell me.
I don't know if I want to keep up with this show
based
on what I've heard so far. So, yeah, you know what? Tell me what is actually going to happen. And then if that sounds off-putting or interesting,
yeah.
I'll keep going with
I'll keep at it. That's fair, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But well, and with so much TV, I think I do pay attention to that a little bit. And someone will say something like about Jessica Jones, which we haven't watched yet. And I'm like, oh, that sounds intriguing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll probably forget about it by the time I go to it. But it like hooks me in. I'm like, oh, I should watch that. I should check that out. So
yeah, that's on my list, too. I want to see that show. I haven't watched it yet. But everyone keeps saying, oh, Guth, you would love that show.
Yeah. So I heard good things.
So it's on the list.
But yeah, like we were saying, like with Star Wars, I guess it depends on how invested you are in the property, movie or TV that you're watching. Because I didn't even want to hear people's theories going into it.
Yeah.
You know, I can.
He like yelled at me at breakfast one day.
Like, don't tell me what
Rude.
You think will happen. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to be in the theater thinking, oh, Julie called it. She's so smart.
And what would be wrong
she
with
knew
that?
It.
What would be so wrong with that if you were like, well, there it is. Julie called it.
Yeah. I wanted to be able
be
to
thinking.
Point to you and say,
yeah.
see, I was right.
See, you were right. Yeah. And one out of, you know, every 100 people will get it, you know. I just didn't want to hear that. I didn't want to know it. I was too invested in it.
Does
so
it, like,
I think it's...
break the fourth wall, or does it, like, kind of break the viewer experience? What is it? What would that do?
I think it would pull me out of the movie, and instead of being taken by the twist or the reveal or the development or the death or whatever
sure.
happened,
all right.
I would not be thinking about that or be impacted by it. I would be like, oh, I heard that before, and that's who said it, and they're going to be all crowing
proud.
About it afterwards. That
so
they
it's less about
it.
Ruining the viewing experience for you and more that you will then have anxiety about their gloating later.
Yeah.
Is
it
that-
could be, yeah. I mean, that,
that
certainly factors in.
All right, fair enough.
Well, well.
Okay, so let's talk about some bad moments in TV this year. I mean, we've already kind of touched on SNL being a little touch and go in some moments,
yeah.
although I think this season has been pretty sharp. There have been a couple of, like, what is happening right now in this?
Yeah. I can't think of anything specific.
There was one, and it was a show that was pretty well reviewed by all the critics, You're the Worst on FXX. There was an episode where the main character, Jimmy's family, comes to visit, and they're a bunch of obnoxious, boorish Brits, and they come to stay with him, and his girlfriend is suffering from depression. So it was the most off-putting episode of television I've ever seen, and I wasn't a big fan of the show to begin with, but I stuck with it because all the critics liked it, and as soon as I saw that episode, I was like, we're done. I'm out. You can keep watching, Julie. I delete it from the DVR. I'm done. I'm out.
You were done.
I threw the mic down. I was out.
I also didn't love the direction the show took this year. A lot of people did really love it. I felt like the depression stuff felt heavy-handed to me, and I didn't love it.
But BoJack Horseman did it better.
BoJack Horseman is, I would put that also on my best list, and they did depression way better, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Funnier. More interesting.
Funnier depression.
They did.
I think, though, I came up with maybe the worst moment of television this year. It was very talked about, at least in my circles. Game of Thrones had an episode this season that, one character raped another character.
Oh, people flipped out over that scene, yeah.
Yeah.
They quit the show, yeah.
A lot of people quit the show. People threatened to quit the show. It was...
I mean, there were op-eds written about what that means culturally that even aired. Yeah, people were very mad about that.
It was very, it was an upsetting scene. A lot of people were just, because it was rape, they were angry about it. Mm-hmm. I was more just, I felt like character-wise, it didn't work. Okay. And it felt kind of easy. Like, it was the easy route to take. That's not good to say about rape, I think. But as far as the story goes,
and it was different than the book, too.
It didn't happen in the book.
Yeah.
So there's also that. It's like you didn't have to do this because it wasn't in the book. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was one I think a lot of people really had issues with. The show did right the ship, I think, after that. But that was – I know a lot of people quit it after that.
That's an interesting show to talk about when you think about spoilers because there's a spoiler every week. I mean, that someone's going to die every week in that show. And it's so interesting how – little people talk about that show as a result because they know they can't say much without it being a spoiler.
Well, I'm a book reader.
People
I'm a book
who
reader.
Who are ahead of the TV people. Yeah. Now we're all on even playing field.
Yes.
But yeah, there is that dichotomy of book people who know more, who want to preserve it for the TV people.
Right.
And then, that's definitely in there. And I do feel like Game of Thrones, it's interesting you point that out because I feel like every episode, from my point of view, having not read the books, is boring for 45 minutes and then it's awesome for the last 10 and then you're like, well, I'm glad I watched that episode because but up until then it was a lot of confusing boring
that's fair there's it's kind of exposition heavy I think the beginning of just if you didn't read the book it's kind of a lot of
and all the characters look alike generally
Yeah, that's true.
It's an acquired taste.
It is an acquired taste, and I think it's a hard show for people to kind of get into. Well, let's switch to movies a little bit because Rotten Tomatoes has a list of the top 100 movies of 2015. Yeah. I don't know that I agree, but you are the experts on all things TV and film, being the Hammerleys of Hammervision. They put number one as Mad Max Fury Road.
Yes.
I would agree with that one.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
All right.
I'm biased because I've seen Star Wars like 4 times. I love it. I think it's actually one, and it's well reviewed. It could be in the Oscar race, but Mad Max for me was a jaw dropping exercise in action and filmmaking. And from a guy, George Miller, who hasn't done anything of note since the 80s with Road
Babe
Warrior.
Babe, Pig in the City.
All right, Babe, Pig in the City. That is of note. That was nominated for Best Picture. But it's just, have you seen it, Amy?
No.
It was one, I am someone who will pass out during action scenes. Like my brain just shuts down and is like, we're done. But with this one,
gore will do it?
No, just action. Like my,
suspense.
Not even suspense, just like, car chases and things. I will fall asleep if there's an action scene, but this movie kept me up the entire time. And then when we
left. And
it's
2 hours of action.
Yeah.
I mean, there's very little plot.
But it's good. We walked out of the theater,
intense.
And he was like in the bathroom or something, and this guy's standing next to me, and he's like, "What did we just see?" It was like one of those movies where you just want to talk about it afterwards. Like, what did we just experience?
What just happened?
You're like, that was worth $7.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, like, it's all on screen. Yeah, that was a great movie.
Number two is Inside Out. Number three is Selma. Number four is Star Wars, The Force Awakens. Number five, Brooklyn. Number six, Shaun the Sheep. How are we feeling about this list so far?
That's well, funny. Selma's last year.
It came out in Chicago this year. But
okay.
Yeah, I think that would technically be like a 2014 release. Inside
true.
Out, and yeah. I think animated movies are a little easier to judge. I mean, I feel like people let their guards down and have a certain level that they have to meet. And
most
animated movies, too, you spend so much time on the script before you even start to animate it. So they do spend a little more time on story and character.
Yeah.
But Shaun the Sheep is an interesting one because it's a silent movie. There's no dialogue. My kids love it, and I think it's actually quite funny. I liked it. It's cute. It's from Aardman, who did Chicken Run, and
right.
So it's that style of claymation, and it's motion capture.
So number seven on this list is The Martian, which I feel like was a really polarizing movie. I didn't hear anybody go meh about that. People were like, "Oh hell yeah, I loved it," or
I didn't hear anybody who hated it.
I heard a lot of just either nope or yep, but no, meh.
I have a friend who's very like, they like their sci-fi dark and moody, and he did not like how optimistic it was. And I think that might be the turning point. Like, if you like your entertainment, it is an excellent example of like mainstream entertainment that I think I can't imagine anyone not liking. But if you do like your sci-fi dark, if you want it to be more conflicted and weighty, The Martian is more scientific and optimistic. And, you know, if you put your mind to it, you can make a bad situation good.
Right.
And we just got to dig in and get to work and
save the world.
We can save the world.
So weirdly, I heard a lot of people trying to draw not a plot comparison, not a style comparison, but a just kind of, it reminded me of, I think they mean just kind of the vibe of the movie. They kept trying to compare that to Armageddon, which I thought was such a weird call. But I heard several people trying to do that.
Really?
Yeah.
Matt Damon is by himself on on Mars. I don't think they're on that. They're on an asteroid in Armageddon.
Armageddon's way savvier,
there's more,
too.
There's more characters.
Yeah.
I guess you have the people on the ground and the people in space.
And we had that...
I guess it was more like Interstellar and Apollo 13 than Armageddon.
Yeah,
I thought
was a weird comparison.
But there are a lot of jokes in The Martian. You know, like, you hear Ridley Scott's directing it. You hear that it's a space movie. You're like, okay, that's going to be pretty weighty.
Yeah.
And there's disco music in it. And it's very funny. And
it
Matt
is
Damon is great. Like, I equate him... He hopefully will be in the running for Best Actor. But it's kind of the we've talked about it, that it's kind of the Tom Cruise and Jerry Maguire, where it's such a perfect role for a Hollywood actor who's just working at the top of their celebrity game that people may not appreciate how much work goes into that or the level of craftsmanship that is required.
Like, it looks like it's a bit more effortless than it perhaps
probably
was.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's fair. Yeah, that's fair. All right. But I thought that was kind of an interesting comparison of that one.
Yeah.
I don't know that I agree with that one, but
Armageddon takes place in space.
It
and
does.
The Martian does, too.
Right. I don't know exactly where, but they just kind of like felt, I don't know. I kept hearing that from people, which I thought was weird. And then Armageddon, I always, in my mind, that's all about Gail Ann Hurd because that was the first thing she solo produced after working under Roger Corman. And I heard her speak at Blogger a few years ago talking about Walking Dead.
Oh.
And she told this beautiful story. People, you know, the audience and the moderator were kind of pushing on her to like, why all these masculine and dark themes that you take on? And she said, you know what? Let's not go there. Let's not say that space and zombies are necessarily masculine just because they're maybe scary or big or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
She started telling this wonderful story about why Walking Dead was such a big goal of hers and what that meant. And so she said, in a zombie era, in this post-apocalyptic, zombie apocalypse, it is the purest form of a moral tale because at that point it's absolute lawlessness. Yeah. And the only thing that's going to dictate right and wrong is your own moral compass. And that's what appealed to her about the idea of doing Walking Dead, which I super loved.
Right.
And I had a whole new perspective on that show after hearing her say that. Also, she's just kind of badass. So right. I love her. So there's that. Let me think. Other things on this list were Paddington.
Oh, cute.
Cute.
Really cute.
Timbuktu. Yeah. Room. What We Do in the Shadows. Yes. I think I missed that one.
Oh, What We Do in the Shadows. Good. It's like a vampire Spinal Tap.
Yeah.
It's what? So funny. Yeah. Yeah, if that sounds good. And it's from the guys who Flight of the Conchords.
Oh.
Like Jemaine Clement.
How did and, I skip that? Okay, I'm putting a star next to that.
Yeah, that one's a definite, and it sneaks up on you, and it's really well done.
It's very funny.
It's a mockumentary style spoof about vampires, which
okay, I'm gonna
we've
go back
seen
and
so
it.
Much about it. Like with
mockumentary works.
Yep.
Mockumentary yep. always works. And if it's going to mock a sparkly vampire, I'm in. Yeah. I'm
oh,
all over that.
Definitely.
All right. Well, we're going to take a little break. We're talking with John and Julie Hammerly about all things TV and movie in 2015. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the duds of the year, and we're going to see about their predictions for 2016. We'll be right back in just a bit on 720 WGN.
Stop. Hammer time.
720 WGN, it's Amy Guth. That song is from the Wayback Machine. Thanks for that pick, Shane. That's a good one. Hey, my friends, we're hanging out with John and Julie Hammerly talking all about movies and TV that happened in 2015, the good, the bad, the ugly, and then getting some predictions from them here in a second about 2016. But you know what? We cannot have you guys on without plugging a couple of projects that you're doing because you're both doing really cool things. Julie, you've got a book. John, you've got a film. Let's talk about those.
Okay. Yeah, I have a young adult novel coming out this summer. It's going to be released on June 7th. It's called The Sound of Us.
Okay.
And it's about a girl who goes to opera camp for the summer, a high school girl, and there's love and, you know, singing.
Sure. I want all those things
in
my novels.
Yeah, it's a really fun book. She's also a big TV geek, too, in it, because I write what I know.
Sure. At least that's what we do.
You know, so it's my first novel, so I'm very excited.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
So June 7th. All right. Well, we'll have to have you back when it comes out so we can talk all about that. That's exciting.
Yes.
And John, film, what?
Yeah, it's called Dead Draw. I'm a co-producer and legal counsel on it. My college friend, Brian Clemesrud, wrote and directed it. We shot it in January 2014 during the polar vortex in southern Illinois for about $200,000. And it just we finished it up now. We're submitting it to film festivals. And it's a heist movie about four guys holed up in a kind of a chamber piece. Four guys holed up in a airport, air hangar. And it's kind of Reservoir Dogs with
nice.
A lot of flashbacks.
Okay.
So there's some Lost in there, too. But, yeah, it's a fun little 90-minute heist flick with a good script. And
so it's going to festivals now? Can
going
people
to festivals?
See it outside of festivals?
Not yet. We're probably going to do a Chicago premiere, hopefully, in January or February. And then, hopefully, you know, if we get distribution beforehand, we're meeting with distributors and studios and trying to get it on demand.
I know that phase.
You know, anywhere we can, anywhere where people can see
right.
it.
Right,
so,
anywhere they can.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, let me know when that happens.
For sure.
We'll be there with bells on, all of us here on Team WGN. It'll be all good. All right, so we have minutes left before we hit midnight. So I want to talk about the movies that we should have skipped this year.
Mm.
The movies that were just duds, that were not worth your time.
I've got a lot of those.
Let's go.
he sees everything.
I see everything. So Julie avoids
most of them. I don't know how you guys manage to watch so much.
I saw The Road Chip this week.
I don't think I know that one.
That is the Chipmunks sequel.
Oh,
I believe
sure.
it's called Alvin and the Chipmunks,
The Road Chip. It's terrible. Don't see that.
I thought you were saying Roach Clip.
No.
That would probably be better.
The Road Chip. I took my kids and your brother came with us to go see it this week, and it was awful.
Okay, skip that one.
Yeah.
I absolutely hated, the worst movie I've seen this year is called Love the Coopers, with a great cast, Diane Keaton, John Goodman, holiday family comedy drama.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Kind of the Family Stone, if the Family Stone were junk. And I'll admit I like the Family Stone, but Love the Coopers was interminable and unwatchable. And very annoying. And then there was a Cameron Crowe, who we all love, Jerry Maguire, Singles.
He hasn't made a good movie in a long time.
I was rooting for a win. Aloha is just, you watch it and you're like, what is going on?
And Aloha got him on that list of worst people of the year.
Did it?
Oh, by casting?
Yeah, by casting the white woman to play an Asian woman.
Oh, yeah.
That got people really angry. So, I mean, other people on this list include, okay, Trump was not on the list for his comments, but Rahm Emanuel was on that list. Bill Cosby was on that list. Jared Fogle from Subway was on that list. So
yikes. That's not he fair. Was,
yeah,
that's
not I know. Fair. And I thought,
I mean,
like,
if you can cast Emma Stone in a movie, right, you're gonna cast her, whether she's right for the role or not.
Right.
I don't
know.
That seems a little less than Jared Fogle.
I do not agree with, you know, his decision to cast a white woman as an Asian woman. Putting him next to accused pedophile Jared Fogle just like it feels a little wrong. So
her character was like 1/8 Asian, I think.
Well,
I think they kind of fudged it. But
still, that was probably not the right.
So that was bad. Everybody's probably heard of this Fantastic Four remake that they, or not remake, but reboot that they did.
Yeah.
Reboot Quill. I don't know what it was, but it was
Bad. Word,
bad press. The director disowned it. Before the weekend it came out.
And oh, that's a bad
there was a reason. Fox lost a lot of money, and now Marvel's probably going to get the rights back to Fantastic Four. That's pretty bad, despite the fact that it has Michael B. Jordan, who was so good in Creed, so bad in Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anything Kevin Hart did this year is pretty terrible. I would avoid it. The Wedding Ringer, which came out like in January.
Don't think I even heard of that one.
Yep. The Will Ferrell movie he did, Get Hard.
Oh, yeah,
that was not good. Yeah. So Kevin Hart, generally, just avoid.
Aw.
Hot Pursuit.
Is he doing that one with The Rock next year, though?
Yeah,
he
is.
That looks kind of funny.
That looks... Hopefully. He needs a win.
He's
a funny guy.
He's a funny guy.
He just needs better movies. Hot Pursuit with Reese Witherspoon and Sophia Vergara.
Oh, that one got... Nobody liked that poor movie.
Yikes.
Nobody did.
I don't know why I went to see him, but I took the bullet for people on that one.
It was kind of like the buddy...
The female buddy action comedy that nobody wanted. And then Vince Vaughn has made a series of like really bad comedies. Mm-hmm. You know, Delivery Man and Fred Claus, and there was one this year called Unfinished Business, which came out in March, which had like Tom Wilkinson in it and James Franco's brother Dave Franco. And that was just an abomination.
Not good.
And then Paul Blart too.
Oh, yeah.
Which we should say, there was a sequel that needed to be made.
It's Paul Blart.
People have been begging for a Paul Blart sequel for years.
They got it. They're not begging anymore.
No,
they're not begging.
No.
Yeah.
So those were all terrible movies.
Yeah, I think those are.
But I'm not going out on a limb on that.
No.
You know, I will say I saw The Revenant the other day and with Leo, which is up for Oscar talk, and I thought it was a big slog.
Okay.
So in terms of like movies that people would actually want to see or might think might be good, I'd say...
A lot of people liked that one.
Yeah.
And
I don't know. It'll probably be nominated, but...
I didn't like
just because it's released at the end of the year, you know.
Right. That strategic release date, too, that kind of keep you in front of the Oscar committee, right? So in the remaining time that we have left, what do we think we're going to see from movies and TV in the year ahead?
I think, and I keep calling it superhero face punch, but the Batman versus Superman is going to be terrible. I'm just making that prediction.
Okay. I can see that.
And I will laugh. No, I really hated the first Superman. So, and then it looks bad. So.
Yeah.
I think, you know, Netflix is on the TV front. Netflix is, I think, had 16 original series this year, and they're going up to 32 next year.
Yeah. And then, like,
they're doubling.
Amazon originals. Like,
yeah.
We didn't even talk about this. Red Oaks, that show was, I really liked that show.
Oh, I haven't seen that one.
No.
Really funny. Super funny. It's a country club set in the 80s, and all the kids
that
work there over the summer. I laughed my head off. It was so good.
Well,
but it's
good.
Also smart and touching. And you guys watch it. Let me know.
Okay. There's too much TV.
Yeah,
I will say
I don't know how you guys do it all.
Honestly, we don't. We will like watch stuff and then we're done. We're very ruthless right now about not watching stuff because there's just too much.
Yeah, there's a lot.
You know,
and but I think it's interesting, like all the on demand, all in the OTT category of like Hulu and Netflix and Amazon and all the stuff going on there. There's some smart, cool series
really
happening.
Good.
Yeah,
yeah. And Twitter will get very excited about something and we'll be like behind and we'll go, okay, we need to like Jessica Jones. We need to catch up on that. And then Twitter has moved on.
Yeah, yeah, or like the Making a Murderer that's on Netflix.
That's right
what
now. Everybody's
because
talking about
right
now.
It's a new thing, so everybody loves it, and then they dispose of it, and then
right.
move on to the next thing. And then
yeah.
whatever
no
you're
water
watching
cooler
at that
talk
time
anymore.
Is the greatest show.
Well, yeah. and so the prediction I'm going to throw in is yeah. that I think there's going to be a whole lot of chatter, and I sure hope it lives up to it, because I think 2017, we won't see it until 2017, but I feel like this year we're going to talk a lot about the Twin Peaks revival.
Oh, yes.
Which I'm really excited about, because yeah. I used to really love that show, so we shall see.
Yes.
All right. Team Hammervision, thank you so much for joining us tonight. John and Julie Hammerly, you can find them on Chicago Now and on social media. What's the best handle to find all the great stuff you're doing?
Well, he's at Hammervision, which is easy, and yep. I'm at Julie Hammerly.
Great. So we're going to look for your film, John. Julie, we're going to look for your book over the summer, and we're going to follow all of the things you do and take all of your good advice, because it's always really sound advice on what we should be watching. All right, so we're going to take a little break and then get you to news on 720 WGN. WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth. Thanks for being with us. I'm going to let that song play a minute. I love that song. That is my jam right now. So good. I love that song so much, and it keeps popping up in my life. I love when synchronicity and coincidences happen, because I don't really believe in the coincidences. I think they're all signs, really. So, my friends, we have been talking about end-of-year stuff, beginning-of-new-year stuff on the show tonight, and that is the theme throughout the show. So we cannot just talk about 2015. We have to look ahead. That's how I do. You know how I roll. So we have with us our new good friend, Gina Murata. She is the happiness coach, and she's going to help us make 2016 super kick-ass and super magical, because I think we can agree that we all need that to happen. Welcome, Gina.
Thank you so much for having me. I love kick-ass and magical. Yes, let's go with that.
That's what we need. I feel like a lot of people are kind of like slogging through the back half of 2015. I think there's a lot of stuff weighing on people's minds and hearts and that kind of thing. And I'm fascinated by what you do. So let's back up even. You are a happiness coach and intuitive guide. Tell me, what does that mean in a work day?
Yeah. So I work with people who know success and have had good and prosperous lives. However, they are currently in a situation where they're feeling unfulfilled, dissatisfied. And we were talking before, you know, during the break about how sometimes life can get really difficult and we feel stuck. And that's often actually a sign of something new is on the brink, something is coming. And so I help people develop that vision for where it is that they're going. It's within them, but because they're in a struggle, they just can't totally see it themselves. And so that's where I come in.
And isn't it so weird how I mean, maybe not weird to you because you see it a lot, but it does seem like there's bigger forces at play when people feel stuck, because it's never just one thing.
Yes.
I wrote a blog post about this a few weeks ago because I was like, literally everything feels so stuck right now, even down to I had a FedEx and a UPS package coming my direction and both of them got lost.
Mm.
And I was like, what gives, right? It was weird. It was like, okay, universe,
what's going on?
What? Just tell me, just what? And it was just like, people I needed to get in touch with were unavailable and kind of busy and couldn't take my calls. And like all these things from many different facets of life, we're all doing that. And you have to, you know, whether you are religious or not, or just, you know, kind of spiritual or whatever, you have to stop and go, okay, some forces are at work, some stuff is happening, and I need to pay attention to what that is.
Yes, and I want to acknowledge what you're talking about is so powerful. We can get so stuck in life, go, 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 react, but here you were saying, wait a minute, something's going on here. Your antenna was up, you were being conscious and present and aware to your life, and that is a foundation for being someone who creates your life versus just going around reacting to it, because you are getting signals. We don't create in a vacuum. We create in a world that has many moving parts. And so when you see moving parts around you doing things that you're like, wait a minute, why are things that I'm supposed to be getting very easily not coming my way? Well, something's stuck. Something's mm-hmm. going on. So bravo to you. That's exactly what is needed to be someone to create your own life.
So how do you get unstuck when you feel, because I think I'm not the only one. I feel like a lot of people right now are feeling stuck or going through some heartbreak or some major life transition of some kind. What do you do to kind of clear the way to keep going?
There's not a catch-all answer to that question, but I would say it does start with what you're talking about. Pause. pause, acknowledge something's going on. Don't just keep going as if things are fine, which is easy to do. But pause, reflect, start asking yourself some deeper questions. Go to people you trust, whether they're people you hire to help you or whether they're friends or a significant other or spouse that you really trust, and just start asking the big questions. That's always the first step, which you're talking about, is what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sometimes I feel like it seems like it's like almost a signal, like, you know what? Take a break.
Yes.
Because if things feel stuck, sometimes if you try to push them, it gets worse. Yes. Or weirder, and then you're even in worse shape. So sometimes it's like, okay.
Yeah,
pausing. I'm going to binge watch a show.
Yes.
And just chill for a minute, and that's what I'm going to do.
Pausing, and like you said, like you just really ask yourself, what do I need? And it might be, I need to unplug. I need to go watch TV that just gets my mind off everything. If you're someone who's more inclined to meditate, you want to take some time and meditate or pray or go to church or, like I said, talk to people. But like taking that pause, mm-hmm. and then really asking yourself what you need.
Excellent. So in your practice, as people come to you, what do the sessions usually include? If someone says, okay, I need a happiness coach and intuitive guide in my life, let's go. What does that look like?
Yeah. So the biggest area I work with people, because this is my story and my history, is people who are feeling unfulfilled at work. The statistics I've seen on this range from either 20% or 45% of people are happy in their jobs. That's pretty low.
Yeah, that's not good enough.
That's not good enough. Yeah. Right. And this is a time in this country where we are looking for fulfillment in our lives. Like I said, most of the clients I work with, they know how to be successful. They're not trying to still pull themselves up from their bootstraps. Mm-hmm. They want to be fulfilled and happy. So most people come to me with that problem. I've invested 10, 20 years in this profession, in this job, in this company, and I don't feel good about it anymore. And I know what it's like to be inspired, but something's off. Mm-hmm. So that's most often the problem that I am addressing with someone. And so we start by looking at, okay, here's the problem. We diagnose. We know what's wrong. We know what's going on. Let's be honest about how you feel. Because first of all, that actually is hard for a lot of people.
Sure.
To start admitting a career that they've been great at, that they have success in, that they're prestigious around, to say, I don't like it anymore.
And I think that's usually not the first step. I think usually the first thing that you admit, you turn on yourself a little bit.
Yes.
And you go, I'm not good at this.
Something's
right now.
Something's wrong with me.
Yeah, I'm not getting the wins that I used to. I'm not doing something right. And then you start to realize, I might be done with this.
Yeah.
Or something has shifted.
That is such a good point, Amy, because it's like there's an internal dissatisfaction. Mm-hmm. And so what is happening is that's starting to show up on the outside. So you might have projects that are falling apart. You might have relationships that aren't working because you're unhappy. Now your life is starting to show this disarray. And so that's a signal. Mm-hmm. And so, like you said, you might say, what's wrong with me? And again, this is my story. I started my career as a lawyer. And, you know, the pinnacle moment I remember is like laying in the shower on the floor in the fetal position crying, saying, I don't want to go to work. Something is off. And of course, I was like, what's wrong with me? I look at these people that I work with and they're so passionate and they're so happy. What's wrong with me? And we start there. And that's hard.
Mm-hmm. That's very hard. Mm-hmm. But who hasn't been there, right? I mean, I think everybody
has
had that moment of some kind of like, what am I doing right now?
Yeah.
What's happening?
Yes.
What the hell's going on here, right? Everyone's been there. So kudos to you for admitting it. I think a lot of people don't want to admit that moment has happened.
Oh, yeah.
And so once you have once you've worked with a client and kind of pinpointed or started to look at maybe, okay, there's something in you that this isn't working with, how do you help your clients reboot and figure out where to find the happiness again?
Yeah. So three areas I really work. One, I reconnect them with their heart, getting them out of their heads, because we're very much a society that has learned to be intellectual, which is great, but we've disconnected to our hearts, which hold our passion, our desires, what we really want to fulfill in terms of purpose, which is what people are talking about. They want to feel more fulfilled. So I reconnect them with their heart. Like, some people are like, wow, I don't even remember what it's like to connect with my heart. And so, you know, through meditation, through just different exercises to help them remember that that's a part of them to factor into their lives too. Then I start teaching about intuition. And intuition is that inner voice or inner vision, inner feelings that guide us in our lives that are beyond, again, the mind, right? The mind is like a computer and can make assessments based on experience we've had. And there's a lot of fear and limitations that can exist in the mind. From the heart and from intuition, we're tapped into something way bigger than what we've just experienced as we've walked to this earth. And it's like a collective consciousness. It's the universe. It's our angels, whatever your belief system, but it's beyond us. Mm-hmm. And that can guide us to do leaps of faith, to sense into an inspired action for our life that will start to put us more on the path of what we really want.
Sure.
And then the third piece is I help people discover their genius. So what I believe and what I have really seen is that we all have an inner genius within us. There is something we're put on this earth to do that we do really well, that we were born with, that we showed it as children.
Like your unique gift,
yes,
that you do.
Mm-hmm. Yes, your okay thing. Part of my genius absolutely is helping people discover theirs. Like I meet people and I just see it. It just like, it's like it hits me and I start having visions about who they are in their lives and I connect the dots with their past. And it's, you know, we all have these certain inner gifts that we're either playing out or maybe hiding because mm-hmm sometimes it's not something that got nurtured in us. But when people can discover their passions and their genius, now they start really living a fulfilled life.
Sure.
And it's not, some people are like, oh, I have no idea. They kind of have no idea what I want to do. But they do.
It's
in there. Yeah. I just, this is the lawyer in me comes out and I just ask them some questions and they start to light up and they start to get excited. As soon as they talk about things, you know, the things that excite them in life and have excited them in their work, in their childhood that they used to do, and they start to, you know, like, it's like light bulbs start going off inside of them. And I always get people to a point of they say things like, oh, I always thought that would be a good thing to do. And I'm like, see, it's in you. You yeah have it. So I what I do is I'm there as the witness and the excavator, and I pull out what is already inside them.
Mm-hmm. And just help them see it.
Help them see
it. And I love that you know, pay attention to intuition, because it's really one of those things I think it's perhaps a bit more mystified than it should be,
yeah,
you know, and people have kind of put stuff on it. But in fact, how many times have we all gone, oh, I knew I should have done that. I knew it.
Right.
I should have listened to my gut.
Yes.
Right. We all say things like that. Yes. When we don't listen to our gut, we almost always regret it, because
yes
it never steers you wrong. You always know the right thing. And if you do it, you either go, oh, I'm so glad I did that. I knew it didn't make sense at the time, but I did it. Or, ah, that didn't turn out like I wanted it to. I should have listened to myself.
Right.
I should have done. You know, that's the thing we always do. We're talking with Gina Marotta. She is the happiness coach. And you can find her on GinaMarotta.com, MarotTa. And you can read all about the stuff that she's doing. But stick around, because we're talking with her when we come back, all about the work she does and stuff we can do to make sure the year ahead is most awesome and most kick-ass for all of us. We'll be right back in just a bit on 720 WGN. WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth with you till 2 o'clock, and we turn things over to our friend Dave Plyer. Right now, my friends, tonight we are talking all about the year we are closing out and the year ahead of us. We're looking into 2016 to make sure it is super awesome for all of us. And to help us do that, we're joined by Gina Marotta. She is the happiness coach. And so if anyone can help us make sure that 2016 is awesome, it is her. And so we've been talking about what she does and what that means to be a happiness coach. I think that sounds like a delightful job, personally. I think it sounds like a very uplifting job. What on earth would be a bad day at the office if you're a happiness coach, right? Seems like it would always be very uplifting and helpful and good work to do. And I love how much intuition and heart is woven throughout your work, because I think that's super important. And as you said before the break, we put a lot of emphasis on what our heads think, what we think we should do, what we feel we're supposed to do, but sometimes we don't listen to our gut enough, and sometimes we ignore what our heart really wants, because sometimes it doesn't make sense.
Right. Oh, it often doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
Sometimes it's not, I'm doing air quotes, productive,
right,
or it's not part of the plan,
right,
or like it doesn't look socially like moving forward. It's not like we're climbing a ladder to do that, but sometimes it makes us damn happy to do it.
Oh,
so we
yes
should.
The heart wants what the heart wants, and when it gets it, your whole being is joyful.
Yes, totally agreed. So there is a story, as we were plotting a little bit for tonight, there is a story that you reminded me of that I have heard before, and I really love the idea, but I think a lot of people struggle with this idea. I love the idea of fake it till you make it, of the power of positive thinking. I really love that, and I really do believe that that is a powerful force. Sometimes I think people get a little... I don't even want to say off the rails, but sometimes people take it to such an extreme, it seems so implausible that they're not really doing it in a way that they're not necessarily taking action with a goal.
Right.
They're just saying, this is the thing I want. And if I say it enough, it's just going to happen. But I believe you have to take action with it. But sometimes there are visual cues. Every year I do this thing where I cut up magazines and just pick out words. And some people call that a vision board. And I cut out stuff and I put it up on a piece of poster board or the back of a door. And I was like, this is the year. This is my stuff for the year. Some of it doesn't even make sense. Sometimes I'm like, I'm drawn to that picture and I'll put it up. And then 3 months later, I'm like, oh, look, that's that thing. But Jim Carrey did this. And there's a story that I've heard a few times about him where he wrote himself a check for an absurd amount of money.
$10 million.
And kind of carried it with him, right?
Yes. He kept it in his wallet. He wrote it in 1990. He had this practice of going up on a hill in Los Angeles. He was a broke actor, just, you know, as many start out trying to make it. And every day he'd go up there and think about, like you were saying, fake it till you make it. Like, visualize what he wanted in his life. And one day he took this very symbolic act and he wrote himself a check, Jim Carrey, $10 million. And he wrote in there, for services rendered as an actor. And he dated it 5 years from that date.
All right.
And particularly on Thanksgiving. I'm not sure why I picked that date, but on Thanksgiving. And when you fast forward 5 years later, he had then done, The Mask was a big movie,
sure,
his big breakout movie, and then Ace Ventura, also huge
for
him.
Oh, my gosh.
And then in 1995, 5 years later, he was getting paid for Dumb and Dumber, $10 million.
There you have it.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. I love those kind of things. And I think sometimes those sort of things get oversimplified.
Yeah.
And, I know a lot of people talk about like the law of attraction stuff. And sometimes that gets a bit, it's like it's a club that no one really knows how to get into.
Right.
But some people really, really swear by it. But it seems, you know, I think in its simplest form, it's just having a good attitude and, you know, thinking positively and hoping for the best. But I think there are some concrete things that are worth doing like that.
Yeah. So I've been a student of the creation process. That's what I call it, for like at least 10 years, from being that lawyer laying on the floor in my shower crying and saying, how do I actually create a life that I want? I followed the breadcrumbs of what everybody else told me to do. And that's what landed me in that moment. And that's what was so hard for me, was it wasn't the life I designed for myself. And I was like, well, how would I even start doing that? And what I've discovered, if you want to put it in a really simple form, everything starts with an intention and an idea of what do you want to create. And there's Jim Carrey with this vision of, I want to be an actor and it looks this certain way and I'm worth this much money and I have this kind of success. And let me tell you, that's actually not easy, because we all in some way suffer from feeling not good enough, or we only have certain limits of the success we can achieve. And another thing I've heard Jim Carrey talk about, this is a widespread Facebook piece, of how he talked about his dad wanted to be a comedian. And his dad was funny, but he became an accountant and never went after his dream.
That's interesting.
And so that first step of believing and even trying to visualize it is actually huge. Mm-hmm. That is not to be discounted.
Yeah. And I think, too, you have to, sometimes it's hard to see where you have fear holding you back.
Yes.
Which we all do somewhere.
Yes.
I mean, we're all human beings and fear is going to be in our lives. And I have found that there is remarkable freedom on the other side of fear, that if you can just be really bold and crazy for 20 seconds, you can kind of push through things and it will never be terrifying again. Not in all things, but in a lot of things. And to me, it's always kind of a, if I have a reaction or an aversion to something, it's probably something I need to run at and deal with, you know.
And this is a part where you're saying people talk about just positive thinking and all. This is a part where a lot of people will fall short.
Right.
They won't take the risks. If you want to have a big future, Jim Carrey's one example, or whatever your future is, it doesn't have to be a $10 million job. But if you want that that goal that's outside of where you are today, it's going to take going beyond who you've ever been before. It's going to take moving through fear mm-hmm. and having courage. And you know, I'll talk tonight about some steps that really help you do this. But what you're talking about is essential. Like being able to just say, I'm going to do it. That 20 seconds of fear, I'm going to step into it and I'm going to move forward.
Excellent. We are talking with Gina Marotta. She is the happiness coach. She's an intuitive guide. You can read all about the stuff that she does at ginamarotta.com, M-A-R-O-T-T-A. And you can follow along on social media. You're on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.
Mostly Facebook. That's my mania.
All right. Everybody's got the one, yes, right? For me, it's Twitter, I think. But yeah, they're all good. And you can go to her site and you can see all these great things. I recommend click on programs. Once you get there, go to programs, because then you see all of these cool things, including, which we're going to talk about here after we come back from news, including the very cool thing she's doing, because we are going into a leap year. So she has all kinds of stuff planned for the leap year. So we're going to talk about that when we come back. We're going to take a break. Then we're going to get you to news. We'll be back in just a bit on 720 WGN. It's Amy Guth. Can anyone think of that song without thinking of Pee Wee Herman dancing on a bar? I can't. That's for sure.
We've gone over this before. It's the Sandlot Tilt-A-Whirl scene for me with tequila.
Oh.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it for me.
I'm sticking with Pee Wee Herman.
Tequila.
Thank you, Roger. Good times. All right, my friends, we're hanging out with Gina Marotta. She is the happiness coach, and she is an intuitive guide. She does all this cool work to help make our lives less messy, to help us figure out things, to help us, you know, pull our head out of the sand and live fully and well and happily and wonderfully. And so, end of the year, stepping into a new year, what better time than right now to have her on to talk about all of the things that she's doing. And so you have a lot of wonderful information on your website, ginamarotta.com. Lots of cool stuff that we can read all about, particularly under programs. There's a lot of cool stuff describing the work that you do. I love the idea of genius awakening, bring my happy back, heart at work, heart reading, leap year jam session, and the happiness consultation. Those are all very appealing things to me, and I feel like I want to do all of those things. But you have about 5 or 6 steps in particular that people can take right now to start creating more success and happiness in their lives. Let's talk about those.
Yeah. So what I've got to offer everyone is first a very simple process. So I do have a process I take my clients through that's longer and more extensive, probably 6, 7, 8 steps to create their year. But for purposes of tonight, I've simplified it into 3 steps, and I want to talk about that. And then I'll expound on it with 5 tips
okay.
for how to actually be successful in those 3 steps, because, 3 steps sounds wonderful, but it's like, okay, but how do I actually do
right.
that in my life? How
we
do
need
I make
action.
It happen? Yeah. So shall I start with the 3 steps?
Let's do
okay,
it.
Good. All right. So a very simple process for creating your year is to ask yourself 3 questions. What do I want to create? What do I want to release? And how do I want to feel? So let me say a little bit about these. So we shared earlier the story of Jim Carrey, a very famous story of how he wrote himself a $10 million check. And within 5 years, there he was. He was an actor earning that kind of money from someone who had previously been broke and just trying to make ends meet. So this is something that we all can decide and look at in our lives. What do I want to create? What is the passion inside of me? 10 years ago, I was a lawyer that was just saying, wow, I never got the chance to create my life. I just did what everybody thought I would be good at. And it's just not making me happy. So at that time in my life, it wasn't even I knew where I was going. It was this open question of, wow, I know I want to do what I'm passionate about. So that was the question for that year. What would I be passionate about? What would make me happy? And I went into that exploration. So it may be something like, you know the answer. I want to be an actor and make this kind of money. It may be like, I just want to be passionate and love what I do. It could be around family, relationships. You might want to grow a garden because you've always been passionate about it, but you never done it. That's really the idea here is, what do I want in my life? Not what does anybody think I should do? What is my life that I've built in the next logical step? Mm-hmm. This is from your heart. this from your heart.
And I think a lot of times we get, I've heard a lot of friends say this. Yeah, but I've spent so long doing X. How can I possibly jump ship and go to Z?
Yeah.
How can I go to this other thing? Even though that's what you want. You know you want to be on this other ship.
Yes.
You're sailing the seas in ship Z, but you're like, but I went to school for this other thing. But that's making you miserable.
Well, so I'm going to – this is one of the tips. I'll just share it now for success is to know you're going to be in a process. Okay? So Jim Carrey, when he wrote that check, it was for 5 years later. Right? You don't have to rip off the Band-Aid and quit your job if that doesn't feel right. You just put yourself into the truth of, I know I'm not happy now, and I want to be passionate about what I do. And you start there, and you let the process unfold.
I think that's a very important one.
Yes.
Because I think people do get impatient.
Yes.
For all things.
Yes.
And just kind of like, why is this not? Let's do this now. Let's, yeah.
Yes.
That's a very good one.
Yes.
All right.
Yes. Often we see things that we want in our lives, especially if it's a big thing, like mm-hmm. a career change. We see it maybe 2 or 3 years before it's ready to really happen. But there's a process of letting go of what you've done, discovering what you really want to do, breaking through any fears to barriers to moving into that, maybe starting to play around in that area, get some experience. When I decided to quit practicing law, or not even, it wasn't even a decision to quit practicing law. It was a decision to say, I want to go after what I'm passionate about. So I made an adjustment. I became a freelancer. I left my firm. And so I had this time to play and say, like, okay, I've got a little money coming in as a freelancer, but I don't have the commitment of being a lawyer at a firm. And what I started to do was just do things that were exciting to me.
Hadn't necessarily identified what it was.
I hadn't identified,
yet.
Okay. But so I played in what felt good. And so it's not like I have to quit my job and make this change right away. You just start to play and experiment and see what feels good. And how it actually turned out for me was I started playing around and I did a fundraiser for a nonprofit that benefited kids in low-income communities. I started organizing a women's networking circle to get women together and have dinner and talk about their lives and what they wanted. I started dancing in musicals because that was fun. And it turned out that the next job I took on, I didn't immediately go to this business that I run now. I ended up running a nonprofit organization about empowering women and girls in low-income communities. So it was like these areas I was playing mm-hmm. led me to discover what my next step was. And that's a really important piece, is to just start doing what you enjoy and the doors open. It's pretty magical.
I love that.
Yeah.
And what was the step after that? How did you then transition into the coaching practice and all that you have now?
Yeah. So I did for 7 years run a nonprofit organization, Step Up Women's Network, and it was an absolute passion job. And it opened me up so much to the person that I got to create who I was and live the life I wanted. And I would say in about the last 2 years, again, it's like you get a vision for something and it's not meant to happen immediately. It's mm-hmm. something you work towards. About 2 years before I left, I'd always known I wanted to be an entrepreneur. My father's an entrepreneur, and I always had that bug. I wanted to work for myself. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what it would look like. But about, you know, at this point in time, I was starting to explore, like, what would I do if I had my own thing? Now I'm empowered. Now I feel like I can create the life I want. And I one day had this moment of clarity of I had been on a journey for many years to create my own happiness, to create the life I wanted, to be in a career that I loved. And I was like, there are a lot of people out there suffering that don't know what I know, that don't know what I've learned. And so that was the epiphany of I want to create a business that teaches people how to do this. I want to teach happiness. And so I took a lot of steps, and I can talk a little bit more about some of those when I share my tips, because mm-hmm. it's all woven into like, how do you make this actually happen, a vision come to life? But it started with a moment of clarity of, again, this is something I want to do.
Perfect. Well, let's get back to those tips then.
Yes.
Let's do them. All right.
Okay, great. So the tips for success. So the first one I already shared because it came in. Remember that you're in a process, right? So know that you might have a vision for something. Don't put the pressure on yourself to think it has to happen immediately. Give it time, like Jim Carrey did 5 years. you know, and if it's something on your list of things you want to release, one of the things I released many years ago was smoking. You know, some of us had like have these bad habits or things that we do that are part of, you know, it's not aligned with the life that you're creating. And that took me a couple years. I was on my list for a couple years to give that up. And I had to do a lot of internal work and deal with myself. Like, why am I doing this nasty, awful habit? And I needed new coping mechanisms because cigarettes were great for coping. So it's like, give yourself a break that just because you say you're going to do it, like keep present. I'm creating this. I'm letting this go. But it's a process. Give yourself time.
That's an important one, too. I think sometimes we forget to stop and assess what is not serving me anymore, what needs to go away, what, you know.
Yeah. And that's the what are you releasing step. That's really important because it's like they go hand in hand when you want to create a new, bigger life, a new goal that's going to take you outside of your comfort zone. There's going to be habits you formed that kept you in the comfort zone you're in right now. And so it's, again, going to your intuition and like, well, what is it this year that I need to let go of that is no longer serving me? And for me in 2015, that was being a workaholic. That was my other addiction, was working a certain way that had caused me to be cut off from personal relationships. And so I've been unraveling that. And so we all always need to look at that as well with the creation process.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Yeah. What's our next tip?
Okay. So tip number two for success is take inspired action from your intuition. And we talked a little bit about intuition. So you want to get reconnected with that part of yourself that has a wisdom beyond the brain and the mind. And it's going to give you ideas. So let's, we've been using this example, somebody's unhappy at work and you're like, well, I want to get into a passion career. How would I do that? Listen for inspired actions. So I was telling a story about how I decided I could become a freelancer. That was an inspired action. I realized, okay, there's no way I could explore my passions while I work in a law firm and I have these crazy demands on my time. There's nothing left. The demands on my time were a lot. And so it was an epiphany moment. I remember when it happened. I was like, oh, I could become a freelancer because I had actually done that in law school. I'd already had experience doing that and the connections to do it. So it was my ticket to freedom. That was an inspired action. And then just doing the things that were joyful to me, inspired action. And so that's what you're looking for.
Part bold moves and part following things that are joyful to you, even if they don't make sense.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they probably won't make sense. They probably won't. Like one of the things I was doing was dancing in musicals. I wasn't about to become some, you know, professional dancer. But here's what that did for me. It made me happy. And one of the things that's really important in creating a passionate life, if that's what you want or achieving any goal that's beyond where you are, is creating happiness. Because one of the things that happens is when you become happier, you attract things more to you that you want. Because you're just, that's just how you're operating. That's how you're vibing in the world. You bring positive things to you.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think we've all seen that in action at some point.
Absolutely.
When you're, you know, I mean, I see it a lot this time of year. Some of the most pessimistic people that I see or that I know are saying things like, I've been sick all winter. I've had a cold all winter. But it's like,
you're perpetuating that you feel. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So staying in tune with your intuition and having faith that it is guiding you in the right direction. So just it's taking some time, whatever that is for you, and tuning into yourself, whether you like to dance or meditate or take a walk in nature or even just a brisk walk outside and letting yourself get in tune with, all right, what's the next thing for me to do that feels good? Mm-hmm. That actually feels good. It's not a should on your list.
Right.
Well, you know, I should go do this thing. When I
got to do this.
People talking about that. No, that's not the right action for you. That's going to distract you. You want to do what feels joyful and good.
You know, this reminds me of, have you ever read, I'm sure you've read this book, The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron, right? It reminds me of the idea of the artist date, of just doing something just to feed your soul, just to feed your creativity, just to kind of do you and stock the tank a little bit. That reminds me so much of that.
And it gets you out of your head, into your heart, into your intuition, and you start to and it's like you are doing what you love and then you're attracting in the things that you love and are excited about. So again, for myself, when I was kind of trying to figure out what am I passionate about, I found the organization that I ended up working for next, living my passion, supporting women and girls in a nonprofit, by sitting with a friend who knew what I was up to. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, this organization, Step Up Women's Network, is coming to Chicago, and I think they're going to hire somebody to run it, and I think you'd be great at it, because I was just doing things that I was excited about, and here now it's like bringing to me. Mm-hmm. I was saying out loud, I'm doing these things for women and girls, and it's what is important to me, and so it starts to come and it gets drawn into me.
Definitely. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. All right, we've got one more tip left, or two left?
We've got three.
Oh my gosh, three. So many tips.
We'll go quick.
All right.
Okay, so the next one, it just feeds right off what I was just saying. Assemble your guides and tribe. You cannot do this alone if you're about to make a change in your life. So when I say tribe, that's your friends that you trust. They're other risk takers. There's others with big dreams. Not the people you were talking about who are like, oh, I've been sick all winter.
Yeah.
Those are the naysayers that
and
are
not
gonna...
the voice of reason people.
Yeah,
don't
not the voice.
Necessarily need those.
Yeah. No, yeah, parents. Often are going to be like, "Well, but you've worked so hard at the... no, you know." I mean, some parents will tell you to take risks, but yeah, it's those people who also take risks in their lives that you trust and who know you and know what you're good at, and so important. And then your guides. So guides, you know, if you think of like, you know, the Star Wars movies, like the original, like Yoda to Luke Skywalker, you think of Cinderella, she had the fairy godmother, or I grew up on Rocky movies and like you got Mickey, like there's a guide.
Definitely.
There's a guide who's helping you be bigger than you ever were before. This is a role I play for a lot of my clients. I have guides in my life. I could not absolutely be doing what I'm doing if I didn't have guides in my life. So it's people that help you, that they see how big you can be and they take you there. Next one is know that a part of you will die in this process. So this goes to what we were talking about in releasing and letting go. So if you're going to create a life that is a shift and a pivot from where you've been living, if you're going to go after a new career that you're passionate about, if you've been dating a certain type of person and you're like, that's a pattern. I want to be with a different type of person. You want to make any kind of shift that really matters. You know, I'm living in these sort of circumstances and with this level of money, but I want to have more abundance and prosperity. If you want to make that kind of shift, there's a way you've been operating in your life that has to die, that has to be let go. And it could be belief systems that kept you small. Mm-hmm. It could be, you know, part of your upbringing and what you were taught in your family or in your community. It could be an identity, like me as lawyer. I had to let that go and say, I'm willing to draw on a different identity of who I am and how I live.
Definitely.
So that can feel a little scary to some people, and that can be some of the hard part where, again, it's not just positive thinking. It's like you got to go through some difficult stuff to really create an amazing life. So knowing a part of you is going to die. And then the fifth tip is, you know, to be successful in creating the life that you really want is take symbolic action. And here's where I'm talking about the Jim Carrey writing the check to himself for $10 million. It can be very powerful to do something that symbolically, like, tells your brain, we're shifting here. Yeah. We're going a different direction.
And it is on.
And it could be writing that $10 million check. It could be putting an inspiring quote or a goal or something up on your mirror that you look at every single day. It could be if there's something you're releasing. One of the things that I've done a lot in my life and I work with clients is like doing a burning ritual, like taking something that symbolizes this part of yourself that you're letting go, or an old relationship or old pain point in your life that you're like, I'm letting this go. I'm not letting it hold me back anymore. You burn something that symbolizes that. And this tells your brain, we're going a different direction
now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are all very good.
Yeah.
We're going to have to recap those because I have a feeling people are already tweeting asking, what are those? Where do I find them? What? All right. We're talking with Gina Marotta. She is the happiness coach and intuitive guide, and she is helping us to set us up so that we can make sure that 2016 is a really awesome and kick-ass year for us all. And you know what? It's a leap year. It is a leap year. So we're going to be talking about that when we come back here in just a bit on 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth. I like this song too. This is a good one. You're playing all the hits from the Amy Guth playlist tonight, Shane. That's the good part. The key change makes it fun.
All right, my friends, this show, we have been talking all about 2015, wrapping up the year, because here it is already. I feel like this year just got started, and already it's nearly over, just days remaining of this year. So we are recapping some of the things that happened in 2015. Of course, in the last segment with our new BFF, Gina Marotta, we were looking ahead to make sure that 2016 is super awesome and super kick-ass. So we're going to kind of do both of those things right now, because we're joined by our good friend, Scott Kleinberg. He's the social media editor at the Chicago Tribune, and he knows all things social media. And if there's anyone that you ever need for 80s trivia night, it is this guy, because he knows all about it. Thank you for staying up late with us, Scott, and
for
being here with us.
Sure.
So let's start with recapping 2015 before we get into the predictions of 2016. Okay. In the social media world, there were so many big stories that as I started looking back through it to make a little list for this for tonight, I was like, oh my gosh, that I forgot all about that. That seemed like 10 years ago. But then, you know, social media years are like 2 months.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, in social media years, I've been on Twitter. I'm like a grandma on Twitter. So I've been on Twitter since 2007. So,
yep.
So what were some of the top stories to you?
Like you said, there were just so many.
So many.
I mean, the one that stands out the most over anything else is that crazy dress.
The blue black versus gold white. What color did you think it was?
I thought it was gold and white.
I did too. Thank you.
Good.
All right. Good.
And I think I had some kind of stat on that. Actually, it was 58% thought that it was gold and white. 42% thought that it was black and blue. So we were in the right camp.
We were in the right camp. But also, I think there was an age thing.
Yes.
That
yes.
I think if you were under 35, you were more likely to think it was blue and black.
But I didn't see the blue and black. That was the thing that was crazy. I couldn't.
Even though we both maintain that we're still 29 and we have been 29 for a long time.
Yes. Yes. I enjoy it very much.
Yeah. I was like, oh, well, I'm over 35. That's fine. Right. That is a good one. I forgot about that.
Yeah. That one was just absolutely crazy. And actually, if I'm not mistaken, one of the other ones happened the same week as the dress. And that was the llamas that escaped in Arizona.
And that was a good story.
And I remember, I'm almost positive it was the same week, because I remember it was like, first we had the dress and now we have these llamas.
You're exactly right.
Like,
I remember those were the tweets that people were sending out saying, first dress, now llamas.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's right. The llamas were on the loose in downtown.
Somewhere in Arizona.
Or I don't remember. Maybe Tucson, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds right.
And it was very funny watching people trying to lasso llamas, and the llamas just like really didn't give a damn.
No.
They didn't want. They're like, no, we're free. We're taking advantage of this. We're good. I'm not coming to you.
I think I heard somebody in the newsroom say that they wondered if they let the llamas out just to get people to stop talking about the dress. That's how I thought that it was all connected. So maybe.
Even better. I love that.
Yes.
Well, we certainly saw some big personnel changes and things affecting leadership of the tech giants.
Oh,
this
for
year.
Sure.
You know, we saw it was actually, I think, about this time last year when Sheryl Sandberg's husband died.
Yeah.
Very unexpectedly.
Yeah.
That was a big thing. She talked a lot about that. I mean, she, you know, took a lot of time away, of course, and then talked a lot about that. Mark Zuckerberg had a child just recently and has opened, you know, this charity ? That's not really a charity. That he got a lot of flack for that because of the way he set it up. People kind of at first thought, oh, he's giving this away. It's a nonprofit. No, it's not. It's a different tax structure.
Yep.
You know, when you really break it down, it made perfect sense. But he got a lot of grief for it because people thought he was trying to do something sneaky and trying to be, you know, irreverent about it. But in fact, he was, it was above board. It just seemed it played badly.
Exactly.
But then we also saw Dick Costolo leave Twitter and then Jack Dorsey come back.
And I actually had that on the list as one of the top things because that was just such an amazingly big story.
Right.
In the general world of social media.
And what's interesting about Jack Dorsey, I mean, here's an original, you know, OG member of Twitter.
Yes.
Ousted, now brought back as the leader, and is also CEO of Square.
Yep.
Which is, if you don't know what Square is, it's that little tiny white square you plug into the top of your smartphone where you can swipe credit cards. So we see this at the farmer's market. We see cab drivers with this. It's really handy. But he's the CEO of both Twitter and Square. And so it was interesting to watch Wall Street's reaction to that announcement because it immediately was like, I'm sorry, how can you be a capable CEO of both of these things?
Well, it's that. How can you be a capable CEO of two things at the same time? And everybody is so, investors, it seems, are so down on Twitter because they want Twitter to be something. They don't know what they want it to be,
right?
But they want it to be something else.
Yes.
They want it to be something like Facebook, but not Facebook.
Right.
And, you know,
something like Snapchat, but not.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Instagram, but not.
Exactly.
Right. That's very true. And I also think this year is when we started seeing these very ridiculous doomsday stories that were like, the end of Twitter.
Yeah.
Twitter's done. I don't think Twitter's done.
No.
I think Twitter's got some morphing to do.
I think it will change a lot.
Yeah.
But I think the thing is, it has to stay somewhat the same to keep people, you know, like the grandmas and grandpas of Twitter, like we are, you know,
right.
to keep us happy.
Right.
Because if it changes into something else, well, then it should just be something else and not Twitter.
Right.
So that's a problem.
It should be
in
a
itself.
Whole new product.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
I mean, I'm almost more inclined to say, if you want to make it into something vastly different, go build that.
Sure.
But leave
sure.
Twitter for the rest of us to just,
right.
you know.
And connect them
to
together. I mean, in a yeah. way, that's totally fine. But don't take away what we love about it. Don't take away the ability for us to keep track of dresses and llamas and things that we need to keep track of.
Things that are super, super important.
Yes.
By the way, I really liked your Facebook post. I think it was either today or yesterday.
Oh, sure.
The one about, hey, while you were all busy celebrating Christmas, Taylor Swift.
Oh, Taylor Swift and Alyssa Milano.
What did yes. you say? You said Taylor Swift went out without makeup on, dressed as an elf.
Dressed as an elf.
And what did Alyssa Milano
and
do?
And Alyssa Milano got a pixie cut, a very short haircut.
She cut her hair.
Yes.
There you go.
Yes.
And it's funny things like that that we sometimes have to stop and go, everything is such a big deal, but it's really not. I mean, it's
yeah.
like Kim Kardashian's butt was a huge deal because of that photo, right, with her
yep.
with the opera length gloves, like looking over her shoulder at her
yep.
rear end. And that was such a big deal. But it was like, who actually gives a damn about Kim Kardashian's butt?
But I think what is so amazing about what you just said is when you look at a social platform, whether it's Twitter or Facebook or anywhere, and you see that one section, it says trending. And it,
mm-hmm.
if it tells you how many people are talking about it or if it doesn't, and that's the top trend, Alyssa Milano's haircut or Kim Kardashian's butt or whatever
right.
it is, it's just, it makes it even worse knowing that it's listed as
millions
being
of people.
The trending
yeah.
topic. Exactly.
Right. Yeah. Which is interesting.
Yep.
I mean, I think the trending topics in general are just interesting because it's, I mean, it changes so quickly.
Yes.
And, you know, the even within a topic, the topic can pivot really quickly.
Yes.
You know, I mean, if we think about Caitlyn Jenner's Vanity Fair cover,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
first the conversation was, OMG, this is an unveiling
right.
of Bruce Jenner to Caitlyn Jenner.
Right.
So there was a conversation around the trans community, around transphobia, around what that even means. And suddenly a lot of people that I've never had a conversation with about trans issues were talking about that.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really interesting that suddenly that put transgender issues in a mainstream context.
Mm-hmm.
But then quickly it pivoted to a couple of different things. Quickly it became, oh my gosh, Caitlyn Jenner has been a woman for a very short amount of time and is already objectified on the cover of a magazine.
Yeah.
And then it was
yeah.
about the reaction to Caitlyn Jenner's photo. And it was the, you know, it was about all these other little things within, I mean, an hour, it quickly pivoted.
Yep.
And it's not just like the day news cycle anymore. It's the hour, it's the minute. You know, we know that more than anyone, right?
Absolutely.
Of how quickly yeah. it can turn and how quickly responses are needed when in crisis mode, too.
And I think right after that point with her, she ended up having, she was the fastest to reach a certain number on Twitter at the time, a certain number of followers. I mean, it was like, first it was Obama and then it was her. It was just,
right.
just crazy.
Well, Charlie Sheen had the record for a long time.
Yes, Charlie Sheen had it for a long time.
I think Ashton Kutcher had a particular, I think he was the first to hit a million.
Right.
Or something like that.
Robert Downey Jr. had
yeah,
something
there was
else
a few
in there. Yeah.
Kind of, there. I think it's very interesting, the celebrities that really thrive on Twitter and do really well, some of them are
yeah.
like just watching a train wreck.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
some of them are really funny and engaging. I mean, I've really liked Shaquille O'Neal on Twitter for a very long time.
Shaq is very good.
Just because he'll tweet things like, hey, y'all, I'm bored. I'm going to Subway to get a sandwich.
Right.
He's not fancy about it. He's very human and very funny about things. But the day that Oprah joined Twitter years ago, Shaquille
yeah.
O'Neal, I mean, she tweeted in all caps, hello world, it's Oprah or something like that.
Yep.
And he said, hey, yo, Oprah, I think your caps lock is stuck on. It's very funny, very creative. So it was very nice. All right. We are talking with Scott Kleinberg. He is the social media editor of Chicago Tribune. And we're talking about all the top social media moments and stories of 2015. And we're going to get his predictions for what we can expect from social media and the tech world in 2016. So stick around for that. We'll be right back in just a bit on 720 WGN.
My house in Budapest, my hidden treasure chest, golden grand piano, my beauty focus EOU. Ooh, you.
720 Ooh, WGN. That's a good song. We got to let that one play a little bit because it's so good. That's a good jam. It makes it into every show, I think, though. It's good. All right, my friends, we're talking with Scott Kleinberg. He is the social media editor of Chicago Tribune. You know him. You love him. You know that guy. You follow him on some platform because he's on all of them, and he's always doing awesome work there. But we're talking about all the big social media stories of 2015 because, gosh darn it, there were a lot. And in a bit, we're going to get some predictions from him about what we can expect to see in 2016. But let's keep on with the 2015 because there were so many things. But you have a list that you found that is the top Instagram.
Oh, Instagram, yes.
Photos.
I have that here, yes.
That is so interesting. And the top one was
Kendall Jenner.
Kendall Jenner.
Yes. She had this picture of her hair. I'm trying to remember this because it wasn't one that I saved, believe it or not, but
shocking.
She was like lying down and her hair was in the shape of hearts and it was like in a big circle. It had 3.3 million likes and 152,000 comments. I mean, that is just, you know, that's just a crazy amount of likes. But the thing that I found amazing, and this is a list that Instagram put together, the thing that I found amazing about it is out of 10 photos, Taylor Swift is in there 5 times.
Wow.
But 3 of the times are 3 separate photos of her with her cat. And they're not like these beautiful photos, these studio photos of her with her cat. They're just the most basic.
Just a woman hanging out with a cat.
With a cat, exactly. And they just got, you know, millions of likes altogether. It's just, it's crazy to me.
That's so interesting. I mean, I think kind of the secret sauce about celebrity social media is we kind of want our celebrity, we expect them to be a little more human when we connect with them. You know, it's like if I go to your concert, that's when you're polished and put together and styled and all that. But if I'm following you on Instagram, that's where I expect to see you like hanging out in sweatpants with your cat.
And on that note, which is exactly right, I think every celebrity has a different platform that they prefer to be that human type of
which
person.
We all do.
Yeah, totally. But Instagram is definitely a favorite. Snapchat for some people is a favorite.
Which
but
one is
Instagram
yours?
For sure. Yeah, you know, it's tough. For me, I think if I'm going to show everything that I'm going to show, it's Instagram. But I've been using Snapchat a lot more as a way to say, hey, I'm not going to post everything on this platform because maybe 20 photos of the dinner I just had is too much. Mm-hmm. But on Snapchat, it might not be. So I have a way of saying, hey, if you want to see, even if you're not tired of me yet, here is another way for you to follow.
Double the Kleinberg.
Yes, exactly. Or 18 times, depending
18
on what
times
I'm doing.
The Kleinberg. Right, yes. Right. Well, that's interesting. I would say Twitter's my go-to.
Yeah,
I love Twitter. I love the ability for serendipity to intervene, that you can tweet about something and someone on the other side of the world can say, oh my gosh, that's important to me too. Let's talk about it. And then you end up in a back and forth. I mean, I've had Twitter conversations that go offline and suddenly you've moved to email and suddenly then you meet them. And, you know, I mean, I've met some people that I know really well as a result of Twitter.
That exact thing happened to me today with the whole international thing because I was just Federico was talking on the news about Boxing Day, you know, which is a big thing overseas. So I just went on Twitter and I said, today is Boxing Day, the day that every American Googles what is Boxing Day. Because, you know, it really is true. And all of these people are like, you know, you are an ignorant American and you don't understand. And it's like you just get in this great conversation. And it's like I just wrote back and I said I wasn't trying to be ignorant. I was just trying to say we just really don't understand what it is here. And I got in this conversation. The person followed me. I followed them back. Mm-hmm. Instantly, I have a friend in the UK.
Right.
So it's just like that. It's a really cool thing.
Yeah, and I think that's my favorite part of Twitter. That said, I really like Instagram. For some reason, I tend to share a little more personal stuff on Instagram. I tend to be a little more vulnerable probably on Instagram.
Sure.
Part of that is that I'm doing the 365 Feminist Selfie Project.
Mm-hmm.
It's all on the idea that for so many women, there's so many women who don't think they would be horrified to take a selfie. that, like, I don't want to take up that space. And it's a challenge to, in fact, take up space.
Sure.
But it's also with a lot of mothers, moms tend to take the pictures. So in so many families, you have a ton of pictures of kids and dad.
Right.
And you don't have, because mom took that picture. And so the selfie puts moms back in pictures, which is a cool thing.
Yeah,
so I'm
very cool.
I'm pro selfie. I'm not, I don't like the duck face thing that people, like when teens do and you see the bathroom mirror behind, like, don't do that.
Yeah.
But like, just take a picture of your day. Sometimes just a face without, without a, without an expression, just looking straight forward can speak volumes. I mean, just recently I had a rough day. I put a picture up that I wasn't even making a face. And I just said, I think I said something, you know what, you guys, my eyes can just never lie. And it was true. I was just really having a bad day and you could see it on my face.
Yeah.
But I tend to, and then I also do the 100 unfiltered truths.
Hmm.
I'm also doing that one where you share just kind of a, here's a thought I have today. Here's kind of a deep thought I'm having. Here's something on my mind or my heart or whatever.
Right.
And I think I tend to be more apt to share that on Instagram, probably because you have a little more space to explain what you're trying to say. Whereas on Twitter, you've got 140 characters. And you can be misunderstood.
And the part about more space to explain, that has actually become a trend in the past month or two on Instagram, where that's actually getting a lot of press, where people are using the comments because it's unlimited. Mm-hmm. And they're just writing and writing and writing. And it's fascinating to see how people are sharing them as big blocks of text and actual stories that go along with photos,
right,
where it used to be the shorter the better, and it just completely changed.
Wouldn't it be interesting if Instagram started to morph into like a blog platform almost?
It could very well.
That's how
do
a
that.
Lot of people are using it. I mean, you're right. I've seen some. I mean, I saw one the other day. I was like, that's an op-ed. I mean, that's a long, long piece there.
Yeah.
I also think, I guess it's probably more than a year old now, but it's been on my radar this year is Medium.com.
Oh, yeah. I like Medium a lot.
It's a great platform.
Yeah.
It's really changed commenting.
Mm-hmm.
It's a blog platform, but instead of just responding with a comment, you respond with a blog post, essentially. Every single comment is its own post of freestanding, which is really fascinating. So I had an op-ed that I put on there about online harassment. And if you go to Medium and search my name, you'll find it. And it was in response to someone created a social media platform for women only. And it was highly filtered and highly policed.
Mm.
And it really, I just said, that's missing the point. That's actually the opposite of what we should be doing. So I wrote an op-ed about that. And I just thought the quality of feedback that I got from that post was so much better than if I would have just published that on some other platform.
And I think the reason that is because when Medium came out, that was one of the things that they said originally. They said, we want Medium to be a place where you can go and you can seek feedback from other users and it can be actual meaningful feedback. So I think people took that to heart, and the people who are actually there really want to help and make sure that posts like yours, you know, are the best they can be. And I think that says a lot for the audience that's on Medium.
Yeah. And I think, too, it makes for an interesting ecosystem there.
Yeah.
Because I've picked up a post that's, you know, I found a post the other day that I read and it was so interesting, but I realized it was a response to a response to a response to an original. So by the time I backtracked all the way, you know, five posts back to the original post that got all this going, it was about something rather different.
Huh.
And the response took it a step further. The response to that took it a step further. The response to that said, you know, here's what was missed in this conversation, which leads me to this point.
Right.
And then the response to that. So it was kind of this interesting trail of breadcrumbs, because we don't often see that unless you directly link to it in a post and say, I read this and it made me think of this, which most people don't do. They'll just write it. And it was fascinating. Like, you could actually watch a five-person train of thought kind of going throughout the month. And it was very cool. So I like Medium a lot.
I think it's amazing because to that point, it shows that, you know, it doesn't mean necessarily, it used to be, you know, that there was one dominant social network. Facebook is obviously the dominant network. But there was a time when MySpace was everything and then it was nothing else. And all of a sudden it got taken over and it's like, oh, here's the new reigning king.
Right.
I don't think it's going to be like that down the road. I think, let's just say, if Instagram does make a blogging platform, there'll be people who love blogging on Instagram, but there'll be always people who love blogging on Medium for the reasons that you just said.
Right.
You know, and those other platforms can still coexist. exist. It's just going to be a matter of, you know, what do you prefer and you know, where are your friends?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's very interesting as we keep tiptoeing up to what do we think is going to happen in 2016.
Yeah.
So, well, we do have to take a break and get you to news and all that good stuff. But we're talking with Scott Kleinberg. He is the social media editor of Chicago Tribune. And we're talking about all the big social media and technology stories that we got into, that we thought about, that we fought over, that we tweeted about and hit liked and all those things for the past year, all about those 2015 stories. But we're going to get into the 2016 predictions too. We'll be right back here in just a bit on 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth. Thanks for being with us this fine evening. We are hanging out with our good friend, Scott Kleinberg. He is the social media editor of Chicago Tribune and a good friend to me and to the show. So we're happy to have him with us. Thanks for staying up late with us, Scott, to talk about all of the big social media stories of 2015, because there were so many. I mean, the bat, you mentioned one I had forgotten about, which was the damn dress that everyone thought was either gold and white or blue and black. And everyone was... people were really irate about that.
They were, yeah. It was crazy, and how the whole thing started. You know, if you remember, with a Tumblr post,
yeah.
And then BuzzFeed picked it up, and then turned it into a mainstream thing. And I think when it was all said and done, the Tumblr post had 170 million views or something crazy. It's just insane to think about how that happened. A dress.
I saw a couple of instances of that as a Halloween costume, that half of it was blue and black and half of it was white and gold. That's clever.
That is clever.
I admire when people can pull from social media to make a Halloween costume work, especially when they're like an internet meme. If you can bring that to life, that's always fun.
Yep.
I saw one picture that was, her costume was a first world problem. So she made a frame for herself that looked like an Instagram post.
Huh.
And had her username at the top. And then had a caption that she had printed that said, OMG, I'm super tired from my vacation to Tahiti. And she just walked around with the picture, and she had like a Hawaiian shirt and sunglasses on. So she was a first world problem. That was cute. That's clever.
I have not dressed up for Halloween since I was 15. But if I'm ever going to get dressed up again, it would be as an Instagram photo. I would absolutely do that.
I was going to say, I kind of am surprised you haven't done that. So we have been talking about all the big stories in social media this year, and there were so, so very many. And I think the space for live streaming is an interesting one, too.
Yep.
When it first started happening, there was a very short-lived Facebook Live thing that Randy Zuckerberg, Mark Zuckerberg's sister, hosted. Not sure where that went. I think it only had about two or three episodes, and it went away.
It went away, yep.
And I think a lot of people started thinking about that. We saw in 2014, well, I guess in 2013 and 14, we saw, you know, we were like looking at Google Hangouts, and we were looking at like the broadcast feature of YouTube and things like that. But but it was still a little bit clunky.
Yes.
Because the Google version felt like a video conference. It was kind of basically what Skype was already doing.
Right.
The YouTube thing, it was hard to get access to that. You had to, like, the first person to do it was the Dalai Lama. Not many people can compete with that. So so there was like an access issue with the YouTube one. But then suddenly we start seeing things like Meerkat and Periscope.
Yep.
And that changed a lot.
Yep. The other live streaming things that you were talking about just didn't feel social. And then all of a sudden, somebody came along and said, okay, let's do this. And the thing that was so fascinating about this resurgence is Meerkat came out of South by Southwest, and all of these celebrities got on board, and everybody got excited. Well, meanwhile, Twitter had purchased the company behind Periscope. And they, from what I've read, they were not going to release it or talk about it for the longest time. And all of a sudden, Meerkat just came on board, and they're like, okay, well, we have to release this. So, you know, even without all the features, all the bells and whistles, they went ahead and they released it. So now you have this war between Meerkat and Periscope. And, you know, different celebrities tried different things. To this day, I see celebrities going back and forth. Like Jimmy Fallon is a big one on live streaming. He'll do his practices of the monologue like early in the day, and he'll switch between Periscope and he'll switch between Meerkat. So that's really interesting to watch. But now all of a sudden Facebook is into this. And yeah. everybody thought Facebook was going to buy Meerkat, so you would have this yeah. battle.
Right.
But they decided not to do that and launch their own. So now there's Facebook Live Video, which just started to be released to the public. It's still rolling out to the public. And, you know, now you basically have three platforms that you can choose from. And the thing is, they're all the same. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of where are your friends? Where are people watching yeah. it? Periscope plays really, really nice with Twitter because it's owned by Twitter.
Yeah.
Facebook obviously plays nice with Facebook. And Meerkat's kind of in this middle ground yeah. where Twitter doesn't want to give it much love and Facebook doesn't. And
maybe Friendster will buy it or something.
Yeah, maybe it'll happen. Yes.
Meerkat by Friendster. That'll be good. Good old Friendster.
Yep.
Well, you know, that also kind of speaks to there's a lot of change happening at Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're testing like an e-commerce thing in some other countries. They're
yep.
thinking a lot about the, you know, they've really been very staunch about the real name policy and,
yep.
and will call you out on it if they think you're using a fake name and they'll threaten to suspend your account or just come out and do it.
Yep.
But that has gotten some pushback from other communities. Initially, that was from the Native American community, but
mm-hmm.
the idea of first name, last name is not quite the same, and so it doesn't really compute,
right.
and it doesn't, you know, you kind of need a couple of other spots. And then as Facebook is, I think, it seems like really making an effort to go into other markets, kind of second and third tier markets, they're having to consider things like, you know what? Maybe not everybody has the very fancy smartphones and the very high-speed internet access
yep.
that a lot of, you know, very, you know, like U.S. and Britain and all those have, as they're looking at like, you know, African markets, they're really like, we're not going to have a bunch of iPhones with really high speed internet. So they even changed their, that ad from a video ad to more like a photo, like a carousel of photos.
Yep.
So it won't take up so much. It won't take so much to load it.
Yep. They're even launching balloons in Africa. And they talked about they want to launch an actual satellite to provide specific internet access to places that couldn't, that can't get it for that very reason. And they started with the balloons, you know,
yeah.
a while ago.
Yeah.
And it's an amazing thing to think of what they're doing to do to reach the audiences that don't have the iPhones and can't do those
right.
things.
Well, and two, they reached such a milestone this year too. Of it was like the 1 billion users in a month.
Yep.
Which means at that number, we're talking about 1 in 7 people on the face of the earth.
Yep.
Used Facebook that month. I think it
yeah.
was the month of August.
Yeah.
Which is huge.
It's absolutely huge. And Mark Zuckerberg has said so many times, there's the internet and there's Facebook. There's mm-hmm. going to be a day where you don't need the internet. All you need is Facebook. And if you look at all of the things they've done, whether it's launch a balloon or change an ad or change a name policy or say we're going to have something different from the like button or we're going to mm-hmm. use Facebook Messenger to let you call your next Uber, which they're doing now.
Right.
You know, it's like you can see all that happening. It's like I have no need to go anywhere else. Just log into Facebook and everything is right there, whether it's video or anything else.
That's a good point because I think Facebook has gotten a lot of grief over time for trying to be a bit big brother.
Yes.
And
yes.
And I think that only pours a little bit of gasoline on that fire. The other side of that, though,
yep.
is it does make it mighty convenient.
Oh, convenient for sure.
Oh, another
yes.
I knew there was something I skipped. They are testing something kind of like Kickstarter.
Yes.
That's a native Facebook platform. Right now, I think it's only for nonprofits around a specific fundraising goal. So it would be, this would be like your public radio could do their pledge drive on there, things like that. But I think there's
yep.
with a plan to move into more like funding projects. With the idea that, you know what, that's one, you don't have to click away to another site. It's
yep.
right there. It's in there. It's harder. It's just, it like makes the barrier of entry a little bit lower to get that money.
And they're doing something, not the same exact thing, but in terms of keeping you there, they're doing something now with reviews that feels very much like Yelp, but not exactly. And you can host your event and it's phenomenal how I really think that in 5 years, there is going to be a time where, you know, you have a folder on your iPhone and this folder might have 20 different Facebook apps and they all work together. And, you know,
yeah,
when's the last time you went
things.
Anywhere else on the internet? Who
right.
knows?
And at that point, we shall call him King Zuckerberg.
Yes. Yes.
King of
all of the world, yes. with 1 in 7 people on the face of the earth obeying his every word. We're talking with Scott Kleinberg. He's the social media editor of Chicago Tribune, all about the big stories in the social media world in 2015. And when we come back, we're going to talk about his big predictions for 2016, because you know there's going to be some big stuff, right when we come back. So stick around for that. 720 WGN. It's Amy Guth with you till 2 o'clock when we turn things over to Dave Plyer. He's got a big show for you, so you definitely want to stick around for that. We are talking with social media editor of the Chicago Tribune, Scott Kleinberg, good friend of the show. He is in studio with us talking about all the big tech stories and social media stories of 2015 and making some predictions of what we think we shall see in 2016. So let's get into that, because I think there's a lot there. Sure. So we've been talking a lot about Facebook, because yep. they're trying to do a lot of stuff.
Yes.
I mean, at this point, they're reaching 1 in 7 of all the people on this earth. 1 in 7 of them has used Facebook recently.
Amazing.
That's huge. That's a giant number.
It's amazing.
In such a short amount of time.
Yep.
So a thing we did not mention was how they are reviving the notes feature, which looks like Medium,
yes.
which is what we were just talking about, which hints that maybe they're going to a blog platform too.
Right. Notes used to be really, really popular 3, 4, 5 years ago. Really not a very good looking platform.
Oh, it was so ugly.
Just,
it was awful.
Just kind of there. But the people who have seen, and a couple of people have had, you know, the rollout, a very small number of people have this Medium-like platform. It's absolutely beautiful. I mean, I could totally see myself, you know, doing some sort of blogging there. But then again, I see myself logging in all kinds of places.
Right.
So it all goes back to, you know, where's your audience, where yeah. are your friends, and which one do you want to use the most?
Well, what do we think we're going to see from Snapchat this year? Because that's such an interesting platform that so many people are kind of love it or hate it.
Yeah.
And yet we see in their Discover feature, where brands exist,
yep.
we see things like Hearst Magazine and, you know, media publishing company has a Snapchat-only magazine.
Yeah.
It's called Sweet. It's only available in Snapchat. It's very pretty. It's like a lifestyle magazine. It looks like a beautiful Pinterest page. It's very pretty. And it's geared towards, like, mid-millennial age group.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really interesting. I think all these brands are sort of legitimizing Snapchat, which sort of had a bad rap at first.
Right.
And I think bringing people around to start thinking about, and the numbers around Snapchat.
Absolutely.
People, marketers and brands see those and they're like, holy crap, we got to deal with Snapchat. We got to get on there.
I think marketers years ago, and when I say years ago, you know, 2013, 2014, yeah. thought that you had to be everywhere. You mm-hmm. have to have a little presence on Twitter. You have to have a little presence here. Now they're realizing that you have to target where your true audience is. And if your audience is just on Snapchat and just on Instagram, that's where they're going to be. There's not going to be a Twitter presence. It's yeah. going to just be a Snapchat presence. I think you're going to see a lot more of that in next year and beyond. Mm-hmm. I think the thing that's amazing about Snapchat is it's a really, in terms of ease of use and how it looks, it's an ugly platform that's hard to navigate. It's
right.
really hard to
it
navigate.
Is, yeah.
I mean, you figure it out after a while, but it's not intuitive in any way.
Yeah.
If someone sits down and takes a few minutes to make it pretty and make it really work, it can only grow. I mean, it's just, I mean, I'm getting into it a lot more. I like it a lot more, mm-hmm. but I think it is just going to continue to blossom. There's more with video there. I think mm-hmm. there's just so much room to grow there.
And then we sort of have the area of, it's not really about data privacy, although that conversation is happening with the European High Court ruling about the way Facebook is collecting data
yep.
from European citizens. So, I mean, Germany has always been on the forefront of that. France is not far behind them. There's a lot of Europe in general has been thinking about that, I think, a lot more and in a very different way than the U.S. has.
Yep.
So I think that's going to continue to be a thing. But
yep.
there's a certain group of platform and app that kind of not caters to that. It's not about data privacy, but it's about privacy.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like about a back channel conversation. You know, we're talking about the text messaging app Wickr that's highly encrypted, about Yik Yak.
Yep.
Secret
Whisper.
Oh, Whisper. That's
yep.
Whisper was the one where people, it was in the news, I think. Was that the one that like very young religious people were confessing
that
really racy
yep.
things? Wasn't that? Okay. That's
yep.
what I thought. And then even Yammer on some level.
Yammer
yeah. was kind of being used like a company back channel, but it would so easily backfire because it took a screen grab and suddenly the thing you said about your company that was this super top secret thing was quite public.
Right.
Very quickly.
Right.
So I don't know what that group of app is called, but that's interesting. But it seems like they're kind of going away a little bit.
It seems like that, but then all of a sudden lately there's been this resurgence. I mean, yeah. Yik Yak is especially popular on college campuses.
Yeah, it is.
Which is a really interesting thing. But the thing is, you know, like anything else in social media, everybody thinks you can just say whatever you want and there's never, yeah. ever any consequences. And they think the same thing about Snapchat, where the photo disappears in 10 seconds, it's poof, it's gone forever. Yeah. It's not gone forever. You know, there's all those things that, you know, they have to be aware of. But you know, students and kids and people of that age don't seem all that concerned about that. They're just happy that they can't see it, I guess. Right. And then beyond that, whatever happens.
Well, and that kind of makes me think that I think the topic of trolling and harassment will be big this year.
For sure.
Lucky for me, I happen to be making a documentary about that topic right now.
Yes.
But I mean, even just this week, Twitter said we're committed to doing something about it. Google has said that in the last couple of months. What that is, I don't know. And admittedly, there's an inherent tension there because I do believe you have the right to say whatever you want.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I mean, I think like the journalist in me and the person who has been harassed online sometimes are in conflict because I think there are valid reasons to not use your real name online. It's not
definitely.
For me. It's not what it's not my first line of encouragement for people, but there are some valid reasons why some people would not want to use their real name online, and that's their right to do so.
Absolutely.
It's your right to say whatever the heck you want online.
Yep.
It's to me, I mean, there's a couple of pieces of it. One is like the civility piece. I mean, I have the right to walk up to somebody on the sidewalk and call them a jerk to their face. Doesn't mean it's the right move.
That's right.
And I think we forget that part, the civility part online. But it'll be interesting to see what the tech giants can do, and I think they should, but what can they do without policing and filtering, and what can they do and preserve free speech? I don't know.
Well, that is going to be a tough thing. And right now, the way it works, it's a broken system the way it works now, because now it's, you know, you don't like something, flag it. Right. So I see all the time, you know, working, you know, for a big brand, you know, it's like I get notes that say, you might want to check Facebook, it's a form note, but it says you might want to check Facebook's policy on spam because this post is spam. Mm-hmm. And all it is a story that someone doesn't agree with.
Yeah.
Something that you don't agree with, like your example of calling someone a jerk, doesn't make it so you can't say it. And then the flag is supposed to say, well, you know, we're going to take this off. You can't remove it just because of that. So you have to completely revamp the system where, yes, it should be up to people, but it's not necessarily up to them to determine what's right. And it's going to be a challenge to say the least.
Yeah, it is a broken system because I think we've spent a lot of time training people to be reactionary. And if I don't agree with you, I'm going to block you.
Yeah.
And if I don't agree with what your brand says, I'm going to flag it as spam and get it taken down, even though you have the right to say whatever. It's just something I don't agree with. We've kind of trained people to do this very defensive, reactionary thing instead of a more thoughtful way, but I don't know what that way is necessarily. We haven't given people the tools to be thoughtful. We've only given them the tools to be jerks.
And that is just it. We haven't given them the tools. That is a key part of it.
Right. So there's that.
Yes.
There's that. And I mean, whoever solves that, kudos to them.
Yes.
Like that, if we, earlier we were saying King Zuckerberg as he takes over the world, maybe him. I mean, someone's got to, really. And I think there's a lot of people thinking about that topic. But as I'm hearing tech giants say, we're committed to doing that. But what are you going to do? I don't know. I haven't really heard them list the steps of what that is.
Yeah. Yeah. And once they do, you have to make sure that it doesn't get people up in arms, because once you take away people's right to do something, then that becomes the story. The story about what they're doing goes away, and it becomes, you know, you're taking away my right to say what I want to say.
Right.
That's a tough place to be.
Right. Which I mean, it's so important because we have seen social media can ignite entire social movements right now. I mean, we saw this in Arab Spring.
Yes.
Right? We saw that. We had a front row seat to protests that were in South Carolina after the church shooting.
Yeah.
We saw a front row seat to that because we were able to see exactly what people were doing. I mean, even you and I watched this play out in NATO when NATO was on Chicago.
I was waiting for you to bring that up. Yes.
Because we were able to say, here's exactly where the Occupy protest is walking, because people were had the Ustream app, and there were like hundreds of people doing their own broadcasts. It's no longer this system of here's the reporter standing on the street in front of a camera. There's hundreds of people doing that and yep. taking that media into their own hands, which is exciting.
It was very
exciting.
Which
is cool. Yes. And, you know, we were able to see a lot of different activity in real time. And everyone's got the right to do that. And it's very, very cool.
And you took that, which was the former version of live streaming, which is exactly what you just said. And now you turn, you know, all the protests that we have now for Black Lives Matter and everything else that's going on with the live streaming apps that we have now, which have become social.
Right.
And it's the same type of thing where, you know, you have reporters out there with the live streaming apps, but you also have the people in the middle of the protest using the live streaming apps, giving you a view that you would never have had before.
Right.
And it's amazing to watch that.
It really is. It's a very interesting time to see all the tools that we have, and I'm always happy to see reporters embracing those tools.
Oh yes, me
too. We've seen some Tribune reporters that were out during the aforementioned Black Lives Matter protests and demonstrations, and walking alongside, showing people exactly what was happening.
Yeah,
exactly. Here's this. You know, Periscope's interesting for that because you can see exactly who's interacting with what you're doing, what
yes.
they're saying, what they're doing. You know, I think it's interesting. So I think that live video evolution will be will just kind of keep getting more interesting as we go.
I agree.
All right. Well, those are our predictions for 2016. Scott Kleinberg, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you,
Amy. This fine evening. Thanks for staying up late.